Good morning, everybody. Let's take our seats and we'll begin our session for this morning on January 27th. It's a pleasure to be able to introduce to you Rabbi Sean Zell with Tiferet Israel Congregation. Good morning. It's a pleasure to have you. Please join me in welcoming him to be with us. We appreciate you performing this morning's invocation. Please rise for the invocation. Thank you, Rabbi.
Heavenly Father, as we have our attention drawn to whether or not texting is legal or illegal, let's borrow from the text of civil institutions for society on the move. And let us never press the wrong buttons as a city. Let the message we deliver not be so much electronic as electrifying. And while other people are using their thumbs, may we never point our finger. And we'll leave the texting to others, but the message that we deliver may be out of this world. Amen.
Amen. That may be a new record for metaphors at 9 o'clock. Yeah. Ms. Margolin, would you lead us in the pledge? Again, Rabbi, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it. Madam Secretary, our speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We begin your morning speakers with William McMurray, followed by Richard Sheridan. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll see the timer up at the podium. When the light turns red, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. Again, William McMurray. Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
My name is William McMurray. I am, my address for my business is 7800 North Simmons Freeway, Suite 400, Dallas. Mayor, City Council members, guests, my name is Bill McMurray. I am with the United States Postal Service. We are here today to let you know that the Postal Service would like to address would like to add a post office building to the existing shopping center or building in the Love Field area. The new facility will replace the counters and post office boxes of two existing facilities within the neighborhood. The two facilities are at 7611 Inwood and Airlawn Station at 2310 Stutz Road. The carriers and boxes at those two facilities will be based on a study, be combined into the adjacent postal facilities of Northwest Station and Brocala Station. If a citizen has a box at, say, Inwood, and he does nothing, then his address and his box will be moved to Northwest Station. He will maintain his current box number and zip code. If he's willing to change his address, with the new facility, he will be able to have a box in the immediate neighborhood between the current Inwood Station and Airlawn Station. The Postal Service has two reasons for making the changes. The Postal Service has had a lease issue that's been developing at Inwood Station, and the Postal Service is anticipating major savings with the move. If the City Council or the citizens of Dallas have an objection to the new facility, then we would like to hear the comments. We would appreciate the comments to be provided to us by February 12, 2010, and I'm open for any questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. McDonald.
Thank you.
I have a couple questions.
Yes, ma'am.
So if someone has a PO box at either the Inwood or the Schultz address, then that would automatically then be moved to
either Brook Hollow or Northwest Station.
Okay, and what communications are we doing, especially the one on Stilts is in my district, and my main concern is the medical district. So are we in communication then with the medical district area?
I had a telephone call that I made to Ruben Esquivel, vice president of the medical center, or the medical school, last week. We exchanged emails and telephone numbers. He knew of no objection to it. I see my time is
My only suggestion is if one of my assistants will come over and speak with you. We have a couple of other names from the biomedical center and children's and a couple of other folks in the medical district that I'd like maybe that you would personally communicate with so that we'll all know.
I would be delighted to.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it. Madam Secretary?
Thank you. Your next speaker, Richard Sheridan.
Yes, good morning. My name is Rich Sheridan. I live at 3022 Forest Lane, Dallas, Texas, and I appreciate being here. Speech this morning is about our health care and national crisis. Jesus said once, "Physician, heal thyself," and how far we have fallen from those words. The Hippocratic Oath is a basic code of conduct for those in the medical health care profession, and it can be summarized simply with these words: do no harm. Has harm been done to the American public by our health care system? I hear a resounding yes from my countrymen, from the American citizens. The new creeds driving our health care system are, some might disagree, but it's getting this way: maximize profit by minimizing health care. Maximize profit by maximizing human suffering. The national wave of swine flu in 2009 scared millions of mothers and children with daily TV and newspaper reports of deaths and shortages of vaccines. Then after the fear was put upon Americans well into the swine flu season, the millions of U.S. government dosages of the H1N1 vaccine were distributed late by the federal government, with some more hysteria and fear resulting, and with the added slap in the face reports of the vaccine not being strong enough. A group of doctors and nurses were threatened with job termination because they refused to take the vaccine. A court order protected their position. The H1N1 vaccine is making billions of dollars for Big Pharma, but the actual U.S. infected population was just a fraction of the typical normal annual influenza flu influenza virus population. About 40,000 die each year from influenza versus an estimated 4,000 deaths, it could be a lot less than that, in 2009 from the swine flu. Some would say, what is swine flu? Swine flu is we the people getting sick of the pig politicians in Washington, D.C. Our Native American population was reduced from about 20 million in the 17th century to about a quarter of a million by the end of the 19th century. It is well documented that a portion of these deaths were due to the intentional infecting of our Native American Indians to significantly reduce their population. Public Health Service experimented with hundreds of black men infected with syphilis, and without their knowledge allowed over 400 black men to suffer for years the agonizing pains of syphilis, including death, denying them medical care to study that disease. Why is our health care system a pig with lipstick? Among the industrialized nations, our health care system is the most expensive. Will be spent annually twice as much per person than any other nation, at about $7,000 per person, or $2.3 trillion annually, 16% of our GDP. However, we Americans are among the sickest in the industrial world, ranking about 37th in health care, according to the World Health Organization. We have a lower life expectancy, 42nd, and a significantly higher infant mortality rate, next to last in major countries. I'll skip ahead.
Thank you very much for being with us, Councilman Atkins. We appreciate it.
Councilman Atkins, would you stand up and
one Mary, our next speaker, please?
Thank you, Mr.
I guess
Harris.
You don't care about health care, and Americans be damned.
Your next speaker is Carol Brown. Carol Brown.
Good morning. My name is Carol Brown. My address is 923 Foxborough Lane in Dallas. and I am in District 5. I am a leader here to represent Dallas Area Interface and a member of DAI's Education and Workforce Committee. I come before you today to thank you for assisting us in securing the funds that will allow us to apply for $300,000 in state workforce training funds. If the grant is approved, we will be able to provide unemployed and underemployed people with high-skilled job training, with benefits of career path and a family wage. Our DAI workforce initiative is called QUEST, Dallas Calling, Quality Employment Through Skills Training. Last spring, our leaders worked with state legislators to secure funding for the Job and Education for Texans program known as the JET Fund. This required local match of $15,000 together with a successful grant will draw $300,000 in JET funding into the Dallas economy. Quest Dallas Calling is a community collaborative project under development by Dallas Area Interface. It is a project, a satellite project, which is similar to the Project Quest in San Antonio, which has a 16-year history of successfully assisting residents in obtaining and maintaining high-demand jobs that pay an average of $18.80 per hour. What makes our program unique is that each applicant will participate in a comprehensive assessment of academic skills and occupation interests. If needed, our program provides fast-track remediation that in 12 to 16 weeks allows participants to pass the occupational entrance exam for community college. We have other major components that include high-tech skills training for known jobs, stipends for tuition and books, case management, counseling, and wraparound services. DAI is an organization that has established a culture of extending a listening ear. These stories voiced in our house meetings by our 50-plus DAI congregations has become a collective issue and part of a movement to achieve the common good for many in jobless peril. For many, Quest Dallas Calling is the hope needed to face the future by providing long-term training opportunities to break the cycle of poverty. Thank you, Dallas City Council, for providing the funds to launch Quest.
We appreciate it. What's the timing of this request?
The timing? We have to extend our draft for our grant this week.
So the application has to be in this week?
Yes.
Mr. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, Carolyn, thank you. I've been working with this organization for the last couple of years. It's in Fonseca Hill District, and I just applaud you for coming down and talking to everyone and let everyone know what's going on. And I support this project. It's good for the community, and I wish we had more people like you who really, you know, let us know what's going on in the community. Again, thank you for coming down.
Ms. Hill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Brown, thank you so much, you and the rest of Dallas Area Interface, for being here this morning, for taking your time to come and visit with me individually. I appreciated the presentation, and I'm very glad to see you here. I'm awfully glad to see what Dallas Area Interface is doing and what you have done for a very, very long time. I'm glad you're a constituent. I'm also glad to see my dear and old friend, Madeline Carol Shaw. And I'm also happy to see a professor from SMU, my School of Theology. Thank you all so very much. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Sure. Mr. Kinski, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Now, I appreciate you all coming down this morning and the diligence and dedication that you have to try to move this program forward. As a citywide program, when we had our meeting, I think this is an important step to getting people the right training they need to be productive, you know, members of society. I know when I met with y'all in the fall, it was kind of like, well, we don't have any money. We don't know where to find any money. Great program, but, you know, we're not sure how we're going to, you know, get it off the ground. And I hope all of y'all got the message that took place late yesterday afternoon that sort of at the last minute, Mr. Mayor, Karen Razor, Jerry Killingsworth worked very hard behind the scenes, and I want to give them a big thanks for making that happen, for finding the beginning seed money from outside sources so that we could move this forward in a quick, expeditious way, which may have not have been the case had we tried to find it within City Hall. We probably would have found it, but it might not have been as quick. So, a thank you to the anonymous outside source that has stepped up to help, you know, give this jump start to this program. I know that you'll be back down here. I know you know your way to City Hall. You know your way to all of our offices, and we'll be hearing with you. But this is, you know, I think this is the first good big step to getting this off, and I want to give you all a big thank you for making it all happen. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Salazar, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Just briefly, I just want to thank them for coming down. Thank the Dallas Area Interface. Not just working on this jobs program, which I think is very similar to what JGPA used to do with kids a long time ago, trained them when they get out of high school to go on to better futures and different types of careers, getting kids off the streets, and in this case, getting people who are unemployed back into employment. So I think that's very important. But I also want to thank you for working in your churches and neighborhoods to address issues in your areas and bring them to our attention so that we can make Dallas a better place to live. So thank you for all the work you do.
Thank you, Mr. Salazar. Mr. Cadet?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Could I ask you one question? Tell me how many, with the funds you're trying to get right now, how many folks will you be able to help?
120.
And you'll take that 120 and teach them and train them, is that correct? And that takes how long? A year? 2 years?
It depends on where they are after they have been tested. Some might require remediation that would take a longer period of time, so that is a stipulation, but we want to provide them with a remediation, which is a short-term remediation, so that they could get started on their coursework early.
Okay, that's great. I knew
but
it was a...
2 years is the minimum time that we're looking at.
And they're being trained and taught and brought up.
That have been secured by our organization.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Ms. Hossel, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I just wanted to thank you also for coming down. We had a great conversation regarding the program, and I think that you're going down the right path. Many times we do training in a much different way, and it doesn't get the results that we need. And I think that this program focusing on, you know, 120 people for 2 years and putting them into meaningful jobs like management and professional careers is the way to go. So I think you're certainly on the right track, and I want to wish you the best success with this with the kickoff. As we talked yesterday, my concern is still making sure that we get our Spanish-speaking challenges as part of the program and making sure that we can pick up some sort of an ESL component. So thank you very much, and good luck.
Terrific. And I'd like to add my thanks, Tip. Had a chance to meet with you on a number of different issues. I know this is one that's been very, very important to you. I think this is a good example of trying to be creative to find a solution in some tough economic environment. I do want to congratulate our staff for, again, finding some outside sources to be able to work to meet the requirements that you've got from a timing standpoint. And finally, just to thank you for your commitment to the community. I know you spend a lot of time on a lot of different issues. The fact that so many of you are here this morning, I think, speaks volumes about that. So thank you very much. We appreciate it. The first item on our agenda is the minutes. Those are January 13th. Those have been distributed in advance. If I could get a motion in regard to those. It's been moved in a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. On the consent agenda, there are several items that were requested to be considered individually by various members of the council. Let me go through those with you. Item number 6, Ms. Margolin requested that be considered individually. That has also been corrected on the addendum. Item number 20, Ms. Hasso. Item number 24, Mr. Caraway. Item number 34, Ms. Margolin. Item number 35, Ms. Margolin. And then over on the addendum, item number 2 by Mr. Newman and Mr. Atkins. Item number 3 by Ms. Davis. Item number 4 by Ms. Koop and Ms. Margolin. And then in addition to that, although it'll be considered individually, Mr. Newman has a conflict on both number 3 and 4 over on the addendum. So the ones we'll consider individually then will be items number 6, number 20, number 24, number 34, number 35, over on the addendum, item 2, 3, and 4. With that, if I could have a motion for approval of the consent items on both the regular agenda and on the addendum. It's been moved by Mr. Cadain, seconded by Mr. Caraway. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. With that, item number 6, Madam Secretary, if you'd read that into the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Again, item 6 was corrected on the addendum. Authorize a service contract for the purchase and installation of furniture to complete the renovation of the Children's Center and shipping and receiving area for the interlibrary loan at the J. Erickson John Central Library. Award bidding to Intelligent Interiors, Inc. for $106,262. Putzi, Inc., DVA, Cultural Surroundings, for $47,691. BKM Total Office of Texas, LLC, for $24,177. Wilson Project Management for $7,519. Lowest responsible bidders of 10.
Thank you. Ms. Margolin, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question of staff is, since we are using 20-year bonds to pay for furniture, I just wanted to know whether the furniture has a 20-year expected life or even close to that.
I'll answer the technical question, but I will tell you that most of our furniture lasts a lot longer than 20 years.
I was just going to say yes.
Yeah, yes.
The furniture that's being replaced in two different sections of the library, one section, the furniture is 21 years old, the other section is 28 years old.
Okay.
So the current furniture that's being replaced has exceeded 20 years. We expect the new stuff will also.
Okay, thank you. Then I move approval.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, item number 20, please. 20.
Item number 20 is authorized a professional services contract with Dan Shipley Architect for the design of new pavilions at McCree Park, located at 9016 Plainer Road, and at Moss Park, located at 2600 Sunset Street. Councilmember.
Yes, thank you, Mayor.
My motion will be on the Moss Park portion of this item that is in District 1. I move that the location of the pavilion proposed for Moss Park in Council District 1 be changed to Kid Springs Park, located at 700 Canny Street, also in District 1. I move for approval.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, 24, please.
Item number 24 is authorized a professional services contract with HKS, Inc. for operational improvements and renovation of existing spaces for the Dallas Convention Center Capital Improvement Program. Mayor Pro Tem Caraway.
Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Please.
Frank, Poe, and Rick, if you all could just come up, just want to get a clarification. With this construction that we're doing, I want to specifically target and ask about the arena construction. If you just give me some update as to where we are and structurally and scheduling on the convention center, the arena portion of this project.
Certainly. This particular contract has two basic functions. The first one is to advance the improvements on the D upper level space that was not finished as part of the 94 expansion to the facility. The second piece is to go through a critical facility assessment, which includes the arena, ballroom space, meeting space, restrooms, etc. So the arena, convention center arena improvements that we recognize need to be made in that facility are part of that assessment to help us quantify as well as identify and cost out what those improvements would be as we advance the design and actual improvements as we go forward with that phase of work.
Okay. And do we have some type of design or thought that we'd like to see in the arena?
Well, we know from our own internal assessments that lighting systems, restrooms, back of house functions, dressing rooms, concession facilities, all need to be addressed within that facility because it's a critical component for a lot of our convention groups. Mary Kay Cosmetics in particular, as you know, comes in annually. So we recognize that it's an important functional piece of our facility, but those are the types of things that we're hearing from our customers that need to be addressed in that facility.
And going through that process, that will allow us to compete with other existing facilities throughout the region if we were to reconfigure the arena.
Those improvements would certainly advance us to that level. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Salazar, please. Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to be supporting this item. I think HKS has done a really good job for us for many years. My question in relation to this contract and maybe other contracts is I'm looking at some minority participation, and it's a good participation, but it kind of like breaks up into a lot of little bitty pieces. And I was just wondering, do we have a plan to help some of the minority contractors be able to build up? I mean, you can't really become a big one if you're only getting a contract for $11,000. You know, but I mean, we looked at a plan to help minority engineers, engineering companies, to go from a little bitty firm to a larger firm. I mean, could you look at that and maybe bring that back to us sometime in the near future? I think it's something I'm interested in. I know other people have expressed interest. But I'm looking at this $1 million, and you have like three large ones, and then everything else is $60,000 and to the lowest, you know, $7,200. And if I'm a minority company and I'm trying to grow, I can't grow just making $7,200. But we do have the minority participation here. I'm just looking at kind of like looking at another way, and maybe how do we target to grow some of the companies larger so that we can have minority firms also be primaries in the future as well.
Ms. Salazar, let me jump in because I think I can, and that was a very insightful comment because that's exactly right. When you put it in small pieces, you can't have the growth. What we have done, and I might refer you back a year now to a building capacity, a discussion on the bids program and the revamping of that. What we are trying to do is set up, much as you said, the larger pieces and identify the joint venturing so you can have a smaller contractor that joint ventures with a larger one to build up that resume. We started that. The Convention Center Hotel is a perfect example of that. I actually had another session with a number of community people yesterday, and we're hoping to expand that to our work at Love Field, to DFW, to Parkland, and to those other ones. Ms. Sum and I have already had some conversations with all of those players, and we'll continue to do that. The process itself is moving forward by identifying the board. There are educational institutions in terms of providing the education to the smaller contractors to continue to give them the capabilities and skills. Those have already been developed. There's one junior college that's part of it, as well as a trade association that's jumped in and has been very helpful on that. So we're trying to do that in the exact way that you said. The strategy is to use the joint ventures. We've already put it in place, I think, with some pretty good success, especially with the first major project really in the region where you had as many minority minority contractors at the GC and prime level that were joint venturing. That happened on the Convention Center Hotel. All indications are that's going very well. I continue to visit with them, and we want to split that out because, in fact, our conversation yesterday was on additional contracts, even at the subcontractor level, to be able to do those. So we'll push forward. Appreciate that. Mr. Atkins?
Well, I'm not going to be redundant, Merle. You know, you took the words right out of my mouth. And Steve, that's something we've been doing. You know, we're trying to do to make sure we educate all the minority contractors out there and all the firms to make sure they do match up. The one thing we're doing, we have many workshops. Is there Dave Williams here and Dave Cook? Just a matter of record, a day. Could you just tell us what kind of education have we been doing, trying to build minority firms and up to capacity, and how we unbalanced us so
so the full council get an update?
Yes, we, since the council approved the BID program.
And also, talk about the engineers, how we're doing the engineer capacity also, besides the minority contractors.
Yes, we have actually been meeting with the community, engineering community, educating them about our process. We invite them to our architectural engineering workshop. We tell them, we give them a forecast of what's coming down, and we invite them to meet with the various project managers. We do the same thing with construction companies as well. In this case here, we continue to make sure on every opportunity to make sure that we have minority participation. This is a situation where we take the project and unbundle it to create opportunities for as many MWBEs as possible. So this is, we see this as a positive thing, but with, like the mayor said, we are also embarking on capacity building programs that we are working to make sure that minority companies do get to participate at a higher level in terms of having opportunities to participate that will create wealth for them. So, and every quarter, we have roundtables that we invite them to, providing opportunities that we have, giving them a schedule of what's coming down, and we help them to match them with general contractors so that they can continue to participate. So this is a good thing right here. The small projects could have been awarded to non-minority companies, but we fight for every dollar that we can get to make sure that they go towards MWBE.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Dave, will you do one thing, you and your staff? Will you give everyone, all the other colleagues, an update, middle summary, what we started out and what we're trying to accomplish or what we're doing, and so everybody would know exactly what we're trying to accomplish?
Maybe the way to do that is to redistribute that presentation on the bids program and the reconfiguration of that program in total.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Good.
Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor Lippert. Mayor Lippert and Mr. Atkins, I have here, and I'm going to continue to work with my colleagues, and I want to appreciate the mayor for trying to pull some type of agenda together for minority contractors. But what I'm looking here is the Business Development Procurement Service. Now, on here you have your bidding goals and the bid participation. So I'm here 100% white female, 18% white female, Hispanic male, 18% black male, 18% black female, I guess, 70% Hispanic white, and I don't know what the PF stands. And if you count this whole item, there you go on with Hispanic female, white female, Hispanic female, Hispanic female, Hispanic male, white female, white female, white female, white female. And I guess I'm just trying to help me to understand how we're trying to fill in that gap where we can, you know, get a little more participation. And I do understand that you guys have had lots of workshops. I stepped in on one of the workshops and I didn't stay long. But the gap is still far apart based on what I'm looking at here. This is in black and white. What are some of the problems we're having, especially with African American females not participating in some of this? And we still have a long way to go with Asian females and Hispanic females on some of this. We are service, most of our contracts seem like it goes to the service part and really not the construction part and some of the others. So, you know, what do you see as the problem?
Well, we have opportunities and it's based on what's available out there. In this particular case, the goal is 25%. We are at 40.8%. We think that's success relative to this. By the time you aggregate all the participation here, we think we've got a success rate on this particular project. And we have continued to work with the 25 industry and advocacy group, including the members of Chambers of Commerce,
Thank you. This is what I would like to have. Look at some of the other procurement in other cities, and I would be interested in, and I'm not, I would be, take New York, for example, or Philly or some other cities. I'm just interested to see what their procurement breakdown is. Or you can find a city that is comparable to Dallas and see what their breakdown is in procurement and some of the same similar things that we're doing here. I would just like to see the numbers, please. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I need a motion on this item. We don't have a motion. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, let's go over to the addendum and pick up item number 2, please.
Addendum item number 2 is authorized number 1, an acquisition contract for the purchase and implementation of software and hardware for a records management system for police, court, and detention services in Dallas Fire Rescue in the amount of $4,910,627. And number 2, a 5-year service contract for maintenance and support for a records management system in the amount of $2,484,902. Unisys Corporation, most advantageous proposer aside.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Cook. And I don't know if Mr. Levine, too, or but I'll start with Mr. Cook. Okay, good morning. Dave, we started a discussion about this. My concern when reviewing this item is the disparity in the dollar amount between the vendor that the manager is recommending and the next lower vendor, Indico, which is $5.6 million. So that's, what, a $1.7 million difference?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So on the face of it, I'm scratching my head saying, wow, why in the world would the manager recommend spending $1.7 million more? And as you and I have discussed some of this, we didn't finish the discussion, we discussed some of this, you're saying that the competing bids or the competing proposals were not apples to apples.
Correct.
My comment to you, and I'm sharing this with the council, because my comment to you was, why in the world would we go through a bid process, a proposal process, $7 million we're talking about, and basically have a disparity of a proposal, and then ask the council to make a decision about what's the best proposal, best financial deal for the city?
That is the basic difference between a request for bid process and a request for proposal process. In a bid process, we are very specific in our specifications. We want to buy exactly A, B, and C. And therefore, by definition, the bids are generally very, very comparable. And this bid wants to sell us these type pencils for 10 cents a piece, and this bid is 11 cents a piece. And the items are normally in bid very, very similar, if not identical.
But that doesn't create a level playing field, Dave. The bidder, Tiberian, I don't know how you pronounce the name, bid $19 million. Okay? And in my inquiry with you, you said, well, their proposal was more expansive and had other bells and whistles. Well, to a council member that's reviewing how many items today in today's agenda, Mary? 75 items?
Yeah.
To reviewing 75 items on an every other week basis, when we go through and look at a $7 million bid, and then we see this disparity between $7 million up to $19 million, it draws the question, is what's really going on here? Has one gotten more information versus not? The disparity.
It could be any number of explanations, and that in proposal process, we have a rating and review. We assemble a panel of subject matter experts.
I see the numbers.
And we have different categories of rating. Cost is a component, the capability of the vendor, the functional match of the system that they're proposing to what we need, how it matches, the technical match to our requirements. And just by definition, proposals are always different from one another.
And it's $12 million difference?
Mr. Newman, a proposal is different than a bid in that it says, I have a problem that I need for you to suggest me a solution to solve that problem. Here's the problem, and here's kind of what I think I want as a city. You tell me how we could do that. You make a proposal to me. That's why we bring all the subject matter. So just let me finish. So if my problem is I need a way to get from my house to City Hall, somebody can come to me and propose, you can get on your bike and ride, and that'll cost you $1,000. Or you can get a Rolls Royce and drive in, and that'll cost you however much, a couple hundred thousand.
Wouldn't one be non-responsive, too far out there?
Nope. Nope, because what we've said is, we might specify we don't want to spend more money than this, but what we've said is, here's our issue, tell us the best way in your mind to fix this. That's why we bring in the subject experts to say, you understand that we want to fix the problem, but I don't want a Rolls Royce fixed to the problem. And sometimes we get that, because the bidder or the proposer firmly believes that that's what it takes to fix the issue. Well, not always.
I'm not necessarily opposed to the manager and then this council approving a higher dollar amount, higher dollar amount because of the scoring and so forth. I can sell that. I can say we don't always want the low-cost, lowest-cost provider because there's other values and other components. I can sell that. But when I see a differential of $12 million, it really begs the question, did we communicate effectively to the potential vendors? Did the potential vendors get it as it relates to their proposal? It seems like there's a disconnect.
Well, I don't know that this is the explanation, but in the programming world, in the software world, this could be, as an example, why we would get a disparity. The two main proposers that we considered both had off-the-shelf solutions.
Unisys and Indico?
Yes. They both had systems, if you will, computer programs that are already written, already in use in other cities, and they could take it off the shelf and sell it to us and let us implement it. They already have their sunk cost, if you will, a great majority of it. It may be that another vendor said, wow, we don't have something that matches this, but we could sure build one if you want one.
And
we're going to start from zero.
And we might say, you know, this box over here off the shelf is not going to meet 80% of our needs, so it's not worth the savings. I need to go have somebody build one for us. Or the cases we might do the reverse. The box off the shelf is just perfect for us. Mm-hmm. So you're really thinking of a proposal as a solution to a problem, and everybody's solution may be different.
I hear you, but I'm still uncomfortable. I don't have all the facts. I'm still nervous about how effectively we as a city communicated to the vendors as it relates to what our need is in order to get a $12 million disparity here. That's a big difference. On top of the fact that the manager's recommending to the council that we spend $1.7 million more than the next bidder.
Well, I will tell
those things together, Mary.
Okay,
give me a pause.
I understand, and we work hard on communicating. We'll go back and look and see if there are ways we could have improved that process with the vendors. But I will say to you, I don't think those two bids are apples to apples, and that causes the differential in the cost. And that's our communication problem in your agenda item, because there's a piece in that piece, there's a piece, a functionality in that software, the program we're recommending, that is not included in that other one.
Did that comment right there, was that in the, I
told you, we did not communicate that clearly.
It's only reflected in the scoring, the number that you have, but not in verbiage.
We did not do the agenda item as clearly as we should have. I'm sorry.
I think the councilman brings up a good point. When it's that much, and especially on software, I think another paragraph to try to almost give a little bit of color to the various bids and some of the differences would be awfully helpful probably to all of us. And then that would also give a chance for, if there's more questions, to probe that as opposed to really not knowing where to position the questions.
We can do that. The nature of proposals, though, as I said, they're always different and not comparable, sometimes wider than other times.
But I think even those points that you raised, if one's off the shelf versus one is being written, those pieces you can get, and I think that would be awfully helpful to us.
We'll do better next time.
That rationalizes it for me,
mm-hmm,
better than what I'm reading and absorbing.
I know. We didn't do it correctly. We'll do it.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Ms. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Good point, Dave. I wasn't the first item, but I decided not to first to have some open discussion. And, Dave, I thank you for bringing some clarity, and also, Mary, you bring some good answers to my question. But also, there is another caveat to this right here, that we do have $670,000 that we got a grant related to this. If we defer this, is there a cost to the city that we might lose on the Homeland Security?
Yes, sir. One of the pieces of this funding is, I think it's a UIC grant, the Urban Area Security Initiative, $670,000 that expires at the end of March. If we don't have something ordered and invoiced by the end of March, that grant expires and we would lose that fund, those funds.
Okay.
This has been a very lengthy process. Proposals were submitted in April. We've been reviewing them very thoroughly before we bring it to the
board. So therefore, on this $607,000 Homeland Security grant we have, and when you start taking the bids, would that take in consideration of the price of UNICEF?
When we started the process, we knew we had that grant and others available to us to supplement our funding.
So do you use that grant as a marker to say that we are not comparing apples to apples, you know, because of these two different companies, you know, which was one higher than lower? Because you need more money, you say, well, I will go to lower bid, but if I do go lower bid, you know, I don't have money to fund that gap. If I do go to higher bid, I do got $607,000 helping fund that gap because I got a better product. I think I got a better product.
Well, I don't think the grant has an aspect. We definitely think we have a better product with the recommended solution. The grant could have applied to either project, though, either vendor.
Out of it. Okay. Could you tell me, it broke down two different categories. You got one $4.9 million, and that is just for the software, right?
The upfront cost, including installation, data matching, training, installation, is about $4.9 million. The ongoing maintenance for a five-year period, the software maintenance, support, upgrades, potential fixes to the program if needed, that's about $2.4 million. So to simplify, the upfront cost is about $4.9 million. The ongoing cost is about $2.4
million. The $2.4 million, they cannot exceed that. Is that correct?
This is a
five-year contract. They cannot
fix the price. The maintenance is locked in at those numbers, yes, sir.
The maintenance locked in. But how do we track that $2.4 million to make sure that we are get invoiced firmly?
We
could
exactly.
Be below. How are we doing that?
When council votes, we set up information in our accounting system that sets that limit, and it can't be exceeded.
Okay, so therefore, in agreement that if they do go exceed that, they have to bite the bullet.
If
they exceed, because some case we have bought software, and for some reason we don't came back, I forgot which project we had, and we had to go spend more money for more maintenance and upgrade software.
If they exceed the price, we have to come back and see you. If they can convince us that they need extra money for something, we have to come back and ask you for it. That's just it.
And it wouldn't be for something they forgot or
no.
they didn't realize how many hours this was going to take. They would eat that. But if it was a project scope where we got into it and said, well, we need something different and we change our minds, then we have to come back to council and ask for additional authorization.
What I would like to do, I would like for you to come back to us at least every year, let us know about the maintenance, because I'm kind of scared in the back of my mind that this $2.4 million is going to increase, and I want to know ahead of time, you know, where we are on a yearly basis.
We can do that.
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Titsky, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, let me start off by saying that we're really having a lot of discussions with regards to the money and so forth, but I think we really should start off by why we're doing what we're doing. And I think the reasoning behind this is a good one, in that we're moving off an old legacy mainframe that can't be maintained, that we don't have any flexibility, that we can't get adequate information out because every report and bit of information we need has to be basically hard-coded into the program and so forth. So we're at the end of life on where we are. And so the focus is, where can we move forward and have a system that is flexible and able to move into the future with, because today we think we want it to do X, but I can guarantee you that two or three or four years down the road, there will be items that come to the council to probably amend this, because there will be new things that we want to do with this system that we didn't think of today. And my concern is to make sure that we have a system that allows us to do that and not find ourselves at a dead end and boxed in and then saying, well, gee, now we got to go buy something else. So I'm comfortable with that process. The issue about the difference between the bids and the way they were solicited that Mr. Newman brought up, Having come from the world of software and technology, I mean, I'm not sure that any two bids that you get, when you read them through, can be absolutely compared to on an apples-to-apples basis. I think you have to give a scoring to the people that you're going to award the contract to from a perspective that you are going to be bonded with these people over the course of the contract and probably beyond the course of the contract, and you have to have an operation that's going to be able to be responsive and get it all done and not find ourselves in a situation that we have previously with a couple of software deals that we learned the hard way that we weren't dealing with the right people. So I'm not sure, while, you know, everybody is very cognizant about saving money, you know, I think in this particular case, the flexibility and expandability and future movement of the software to the future is going to be well worth the additional money that we spend, because I think we probably would have found this on the other package than spending the money, but it's got the brand deal. Either you buy it today or you're going to pay for it one way or the other, and I think that's basically what we've got, you know, before us. So if there's not a motion, I'm going to move approval on this. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I think Ron answered my question about the software.
Okay.
I'm going to be moving for approval on this item, so we can move forward.
Ms. Margolin?
Thank you. I had a meeting the other day with Mr. Levine and some of the police because I was concerned about this. I left that meeting feeling very, very comfortable that this had been vetted, that they had talked to other cities, municipalities that use it and felt very comfortable with it, that a lot of due diligence has been done on this system, and so I have no qualms about it.
Good. Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed to order? Madam Secretary, would you read 34 and 35 in the record together?
Item number 34 is authorized a settlement in lieu of proceeding with condemnation of a tract of land containing approximately 3,520 square feet from Star Productions, Inc., located near the intersection of Live Oak and St. Paul Streets for the Pacific Plaza Park project. Item number 35 is authorized settlement in lieu of proceeding with condemnation of a tract of land containing approximately 22,801 square feet located near the intersection of Live Oak and St. Paul Streets for the Pacific Plaza Park project.
Ms. Margolin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I pulled these because I had asked staff a question about it, and the answer disturbed me a bit. We're looking at buying 34,781 square feet of land. The DCAT appraisal on it is $75 a square foot, or about $2.6 million. Our appraisal on it is about $95 a square foot, or about $3.3 million. And our offer is at $110 a square foot, or $3.8 million. So we're offering about $1.2 million over DCAT and about $500,000 over our own appraisal. And I'm wondering why we're doing this. My understanding is that we don't have the funds for to build out the park at this point. So why are we in such a rush to do this, and why are we doing it this way?
Yes, ma'am. This is part of the Park Pacific Plaza Downtown Park, and we've been working on acquiring all the land necessary for this park for 4 or 5 years, I believe. These are the last two pieces. This is a settlement in lieu of condemnation. It is more than the appraised value. We found, though, in assembling downtown property, that's not at all unusual. For instance, our Main Street Gardens, we initially offered about $5 million, went through condemnation on that, and ended up paying almost $10 million for that property. So we think this is a fair settlement. It does put the last pieces together. We typically like to have acquisition in place before we go to the voters for design and construction money. I know that Parks is hoping that this will go with the next program, so we'd like to finish this acquisition and get everything assembled.
Why would we settle in lieu of condemnation when we're settling for so much more than we think we need to pay?
We feel pretty certain that if we go to condemnation, we'll end up paying more than this.
Why?
The Commissioner's Court typically awards higher than this. I think the last settlement was about $125 a square foot, so we think we're under that now.
So they typically award more than the appraised value?
Oh, yes, ma'am. In Main Street Gardens, we've paid almost double.
Ms. Margolin, Chris Bowers, one thing that we need to bring to your attention is that if we have a trial, the DCAT value is inadmissible. The jurors will never hear that value, and the courts have ruled that way because those values are considered too unreliable. It's my understanding that the other side here would make the case that the property has a value of $125 a square foot.
And what are they basing on that on? Do they have an appraisal at $125?
They were basing it off of sales as well as pointing to us the Main Street Gardens case, which Ms. O'Donnell just referred to, which was a case where we did go all the way through the process, and ultimately there was an award substantially higher than where we were.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Hensley?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Dyer, are you back here? Mr. Dyer, how long have we had the Pacific Plaza Park plan going forward? When did we begin that?
It began with the advent of the master plan process, which was about 5.5-6 years ago.
And I think at the time, in talking with you throughout these last several years, we've known that we're going to have to pick up several tracts of land in order to make this park possible.
This is a very difficult tract to cobble together. Multiple owners, some family owners trying to get in to settle their differences, and so it's been a very long and arduous process.
And we've worked with, the National Trust for Public Land, is that?
Yes, and they acquired a portion of it, and then after that we picked up the rest. We're picking up the rest of it through the city.
So this has been a long, ongoing project, and we're trying to finally wrap it up.
Yes, and one good reason for buying it now is if we wait a year or two, who knows what the price may be if it starts escalating back to where it was.
And now's a good time to buy.
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to talk with Ms. Margolin about this. She didn't come to me with her concerns, but I would like to share that we've had ample opportunity to discuss this project as well as the need to purchase this property at this time. So, Mr. Mayor, I'll move to approve.
It's been moved. It's been seconded. All those in favor signify. And this is on 34 and 35, right? The time of motion. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Thank you. Madam Secretary, let's go to addendum item number 3. And Mr. Newman, I believe you have a conflict on this.
Yes,
and the next one.
We'll get 3 and 4, Mayor.
Right.
Addendum item number 3.
The record shows Mr. Newman is excused himself from the chambers.
Addendum item number 3 is authorize the preparation of plans for the issuance of the combination tax and revenue certificates of obligation, Series 2010, in an amount not to exceed $23 million, and enacting other provisions in connection therewith. Councilmember Davis had requested the item be pulled.
Ms. Davis, I believe you had an amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I would like to make a motion on addendum item number 3. I made a motion to approve addendum item number 3 with an amendment to Exhibit A to add the following words to items I of the certificate of obligation notice attached to the resolution to include in the item and include the acquisition of land, therefore, located at 2610 Anderson Street and 2611 Anderson Street.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, addendum item number 4, and again, Mr. Newman has a conflict. He is out of the chamber.
Addendum item number 4 is authorize the preparation of plans for the issuance of general obligation refunding and improvement bonds, Series 2010, in an amount not to exceed $164
$1,500,000.
Ms. Margolin?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Last week, I expressed some concerns about increasing our debt service for next year's budget, which is going to be as difficult as this year's budget was. But I've become convinced that the use of commercial paper and the opportunity that this economy presents for getting some of our projects done for less money than we had originally budgeted is too good an opportunity to pass up. And so I'm going to support this, but I do have a friendly amendment. If somebody, well, I guess I'll make the motion, I'll make the amendment. So if we get a second, we'll see. So I move to approve addendum item number 4 with the following amendment: that the city manager is hereby directed to brief the Budget, Finance, and Audit Committee every 6 months on the savings realized on completed projects from the 2006 bond program, that the savings be accrued to a separate account, and that the report include the amount of commercial paper used. I've visited with Ms. Soom about this, and she can speak for herself, but she indicated that she was fine with it. What I'm really trying to do here is on every 6 months to have the council or have the committee apprised of, in fact, how much money is being saved on the projects that we're doing. Given that this is an opportune time to do them, I just want to see every 6 months what we're really accomplishing in the way of savings, and to have that money set aside to do with what the manager and the council sees fit. So I'm really asking for a report every 6 months.
Good move, good addition, and that has been seconded.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One of the reasons that during this budget discussion this year I had real concerns about where we were going, the direction we were going in, and the challenges we were going to face for next year's budget had to do with the sale of our debt. And I think that the creativity that our staff has shown in the use of commercial paper, which is a less expensive means of borrowing money than our general obligation bonds, is an excellent step. But the concern I have is the same concern, that we're looking at $6.8 million additional debt service that we're going to pass on for next year. And so that's my concern, that we figure out a way to keep us debt service neutral, and we keep that to zero, because I think we're going to be looking at every penny we can find to try to balance next year's budget and keep the service levels that we want to keep for our residents. And so when I talked with Mr. Cook about this, what we're talking about here is $129 million of bond funds that we're talking about selling in March, and that's going to cost us $1.3 million next year. We're also talking about issuing $350 million in commercial paper, which is going to cost us $5.5 million next year, for a total of $6.8 million. What I'm suggesting is we slightly reduce the $129 million to get us from $1.3 million to zero, and that we significantly reduce our $350 million commercial paper sale in October. And frankly, I chose the wrong adjective. I think it would be somewhat reduce our commercial paper, so that, again, we end up with a net of zero. So I think it's terrific that we're going to be saving money using commercial paper, I still think it's a bad idea for us to borrow more money than we have coming in, when we're having to tighten our belts, when we're having to do furlough days, when we're cutting our parks budget, our streets budget, our code budget, every budget we've gotten, when we're laying off employees. I just think it's a bad idea, and I think next year's budget is going to be even worse, and we're setting ourselves up for a very bad situation. So I fully believe that we need to go forward with our bond program, that it's critical that we maintain our streets and move forward on improvements to our alleys and sewage systems and parks, and I support that. But let me be clear. I think that we should do it in a very fiscally responsible way so that we marginally reduce the amount of debt service and keep it at zero for next year. So I will not be supporting this. I would support it if we could slightly pull back on it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I will be supporting this issue, the agenda. You know, if you look back, and I'm glad, Mary, that you are, you're kind of thinking out of the box and trying to come up with creative finance with commercial paper. You know, we owe the taxpayer and the citizen $62,006 bond package that we have obligation to the citizen to make sure that we get some of this project finished. And we need to get these projects finished, because if we don't, it's going to cost us more money at the end of the day. And by doing this, I think we are in the right direction to show the citizen of Dallas that when we do come to you to another bond package, that we are going to follow your lead and we're going to respect your wishes when you vote for the bond package. And I think this will kind of send a message out to the people to say, hey, we are trying to do, in this tight recession, in this tight budget, that we are trying to come up with some kind of way to make sure your project is getting done. And I got to get a hand out to the staff and everybody doing this, but we also got to come to the point that Andrew brought up, you know, with the debt service that we're going to have next year in this tight budget year, you know, we just got to make sure that we look at every revenue opportunity to come to the city to make sure that we do have the revenue to pay for these bonds and to pay for these projects. And I just ask the council that during this budget cycle, remember what the voters said in 2006, and I'm not going to be redundant, that we do have two resources, that sales tax and property tax, and we got to look at that. If you want to balance your budget, be open-minded for what we need to do. And I think this is the first step we're trying to do to make sure that our streets are taken care of and make sure, hopefully, we don't have any furloughs and cuts. Because right now, we're going to cut so much last year. As Steve Salazar said, you cut so much meat off the bone, then you get to the bone and let us a cut. So I hope this is the right step, that we're not going to cut anything else. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Hill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. With the chair's permission, I would like to direct a question directly to Ms. Margolin.
Please.
Ms. Margolin, on your floor amendment, are you suggesting that the monies placed into the separate account be used for something specific, or will that be for general funds?
No, I'm not suggesting it be used for anything specific. I'm just wanting to keep track of it. And as a matter of fact, Ms. Zoom said that actually already happens. So I just wanted to get a reporting of it.
And either Mr. Perkins or Ms. Zoom, is this separation legally permissible?
Yes, ma'am. And how it's separated also by proposition, so that if we build a library and we thought we were going to spend $5 million doing it, and we get all the way through the project and we've only spent $4.5 million, that money is in a separate account, but it also says it's in the library proposition, so that if another library came in over what we thought, you could spend that money and finish that library. Or if all the libraries come in and you've got that money left over, it's a decision that you would probably end up making to say, we don't buy more debt. We use that rather than issue more debt. We pay down our debt service costs. It really is transparency for y'all to know what's happening with that. What I anticipate is that the bonds that we've issued and are fixing to issue, we'll spend less of those, and that we'll end up buying less commercial paper. So we think it's a good idea. It will get y'all involved in the reporting mechanism. You'll know what savings we had. You'll know how much of the commercial paper we've spent. It's just an accounting mechanism.
And you're saying to us that this will not be overly burdensome for your staff, and we will not have to add staff to do this?
No, ma'am.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, I have one question. When will
the commercial papers year? What year will we start doing
this? We will come to you at the end of this fiscal year, beginning of next fiscal year, and say, here's the program, approve it. Right now, all we're doing is approving this issuance of bonds. Come August, September, we'll say, we've got the commercial paper program together. Do you still want to do that? So there's another decision point coming up. Now, if the world had come to an end by then, you might say, nope, we don't want to do that. But for right now, we recommend doing that, and we'll bring it back to you at the end of the fiscal year, beginning of the next fiscal year.
And so we're perhaps looking at 2011?
If we were to go ahead, it would be approved at the, you know, 2010 in September or October, and we'd be using it through 10 and 11, yes.
Okay, 10 and 11. And then the other thing on the savings, when you put it into a separate account with commercial paper, does it accrue any type of interest or anything?
Yes, any money we have in the bank would accrue a little bit of interest, but we can't make money on debt like that.
Okay. And then my last question. You just said if we are billing, a facility, and say it comes under budget, then there's money sitting there, and it has to stay with that.
In that proposition, yes.
Okay, so we can't move it to something else.
You couldn't save money on a library and then go spend it on a fire station or a street.
Okay, so say that all that money builds up on that one particular item, then what happened to that money?
Well, one of two things. If it were in the library proposition, the example I'm using it, you might have another library that costs more. You might decide you want to do something extra in a library, but more than likely you're going to say, you know, I don't want to issue any commercial paper. Mm-hmm. I don't want to charge anything else. Or maybe I want to pay down my charge card already, and you
okay.
use that money for that.
For that. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mr. Zipsky, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, I think we need to keep our eye on the ball here, and that's we had a bond program that we're trying to move forward, and the citizens of the city voted overwhelmingly in support of that, in spite of the fact that we got dramatically different economic and financial times today than we did when they voted for it. I think we have to keep our eye on the future. Currently, right now, we seem to be debating whether we should incur $6.8 million worth of debt. Very simplistically, you've got $129 million worth of projects that we're going to be able to move forward at a cost probably significantly lower than what we estimated that they go into the bond program for. But let's just say that we didn't, and prices come back and raise only 10% higher than what they are today. And today they are substantially lower than what we did when we put them in the bond program. If prices only go up 10% on those $129 million worth of projects, we'll be spending an extra $13 million to get those same projects done, which is approximately double what the interest that we're talking about moving them forward today. And that has nothing to do with the fact that we're refinancing these things at 1.5% lower than we currently have them financed at. And that's a significant amount of money there. So I think that what the manager brought to us is an innovative, creative, but still conservative way to finance the projects, get them moving forward, get them done, and position the city for the future. So I am going to definitely be supporting this, and I will also be supporting Ms. Margolin's four amendments here, because I think they codify what staff is already doing. These are basically things, and I think it's better for us to have them in writing and make sure that we've got them there as we move forward. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And Mr. Zinsky, I'll take that as a second to Ms. Margolin's motion.
Absolutely. I thought it had been, but I will certainly second it.
Yes, and I have to agree, because I'm looking at the construction cost indexes for the last several years, and we are at historic lows for construction right now. Just the cost of rebar and concrete and so on and so forth have dramatically dropped in the last year and a half. I know that everybody that has got state money for highways is trying to bring those projects to construction as well, because they realize the cost savings. So I think this is a good time for us to go ahead and proceed with our bond sales, knowing the construction costs will be less. And I do agree with Mr. Natinsky that we are refunding $35 million worth of bonds at a lower interest rate of 3.6, and the original rate was 5%. So that will be good for the city as well. Mr. Cook, can you ask just one question for me? What do you sort of anticipate the $129 million, the interest rate on the $129 million? Because I know you don't have a crystal ball.
I'm going to ask Jean what that number is. We have an estimated number.
Okay.
Right now, our financial advisors are giving us a rate of about 3.6%.
Right. And I just pointed out that 10 years ago, because we're in this refunding portion of it as well, what rate was that 10 years ago that we locked in for 10 years on the $35 million?
Probably around 5%.
5%. Okay. Yeah. So that is, you know, I'm not going to put a pencil to it or anything, but that is a tremendous savings over the life of the bonds, which after 10 years of having this set of bonds, which is $129 million, you can go into a refunding situation. Is that correct?
We could if the
if the interest rate went lower. It's a very good interest rate. So I'll be supporting Ms. Margolin's amendment. I think that's a prudent thing to do. Through this process, we learned that when you go to the commercial paper portion of it, unlike the bond, where you have the bonds, you sell the bonds, and you go in and you design the project and you let it out for bid and you construct it. In this portion of it, actually what you're doing is you're getting the project ready to go and only selling that commercial paper that you need for that particular project or that particular set of projects in a just-in-time situation. So there's a savings there, too. As we go through this, I thought it was a good idea, like I said, that Ms. Margolin wants to bring it back every 6 months. And I think originally I had asked for a briefing on commercial paper because I think it really is something that we need to understand more fully. And I appreciate you coming up with the amendment for 6 months because I want to know where the project, how many projects have been completed and where we are on the sale of commercial paper as well. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Kennedy, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, will be supporting the addendum and the amendment. And I'd just like to thank staff for coming up with the innovative ideas of how to save money. And we saved quite a bit there with the interest that you came up with and how you came up with it. The bonds that we've had approved for 2006, We took a lot away from our citizens in our last budget. If we take this away, I mean, that's just like insult to me. We have to have what we had in the 2006 bond to keep this city on a little bit on track. If we don't have that, we're going to have a lot of things that have gone downhill that will be very hard to bring back without what we need to do in this 2006 bond. So I appreciate what you all are doing to come up with new ideas to save money, and I'm totally for moving this 2006 bond along because there's things there that we must have to keep our city on an even keel. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Carraway, please.
Thank you, Mayor, and I'll be short. Ms. Margolin, I'm supporting your amendment, and thanks to the staff, you're thinking out of the box. That's the way that we have to continue to do so we can figure out ways to save money and make more money as we move forward. So, good idea, and I'm in support.
Terrific. I'm going to make a couple of comments because I think this is a fascinating question in front of us. It is one item, but it's got so much more in terms of implications for us. And again, not in the next 6 months, but in the next year. I think we will have a tough year on the budget this year. But I'll also tell you, I think the next several years are going to be tough one way or another. Last week I was in Washington, met with mayors across the country, and I can tell you, cities across this nation are having to look at what they do, reassess what they do, and change what they do. And they're looking several years out. And I think that's the situation at the local governments and at the state level governments, because the world's just a very different place and it's not going to go back to what it was. With that said, the question in front of us then is, what's the best way to look at our city going forward? Because unlike a lot of other cities, we've got the potential to grow. And again, a good economy, prospects in the future. So while we'll have a tough year, fundamental issues are, we can look at the short-term issues and try to increase and protect our operating costs and our operating expenditures, or we can try to look at what we need to do to continue to build the city long into the future.
And the important aspect of that with the capital expenditures is that provides assets. Assets that we leverage off. And it's interesting to look at some of the things that are included in this bond that some folks would like to reduce. It's things like streets, stormwaters, fire stations, those sorts of things. All of those sorts of things, when you delay them, you substantially increase the cost in deferred maintenance. And one of the challenges that this council has, and we see it literally every single time we get together, is we are making up for costs when we had a deferred maintenance schedule that was not maintained, we didn't go forward with expenditures, all of those sorts of things, we've got additional costs today. So we can go ahead and take a very short-term focus, get rid of the bond program, but all we will be doing is pushing those costs on to some council out in the future. All of these pieces reduce operating expenditures because we're investing in it. I can tell you it's a whole lot cheaper to build a street than it is to try to repair a street literally every single year going forward. Our fire stations, we can go ahead and continue to put new roofs on those sorts of things, or we can, what we should do, which is a good fiscal, good business decision, is really improve and put a new fire station in when we need to do that. All of those sorts of things become major issues. That even puts aside the question that we are going to be in an environment now of saving, your guess is as good as mine, but anywhere from 1 to 3 percentage points. And those, when we do 30-year bonds, are costs that this city pays 30 years out. So we will, if we don't go forward and we do this in 3 or 4 years, or whatever you want to pick, we're going to end up in a higher interest rate environment. That's going to add anywhere from $1.5 to $4 million additional costs, as opposed to going forward today. So when you start looking at the long-term costs associated with this city, when you start looking at what's the right fiscal decision, the right budget decisions, not only for this year, but for years 2011, 12, 13, and on, this becomes a very easy decision. As Mr. Nikinski and Ms. Coop pointed out, in addition to that, we're in an environment where the capital projects themselves are going to save anywhere from 15 to 40%. As I mentioned, we were in the briefing, the Strauss came in 40% under where it was. I can tell you that is a lot of money that we save, and it's money that produces an asset that we get a benefit of. So while we're going to have a tough budget year, we're going to continue to have tough budget years, but keep in mind, the city of Dallas will always balance the budget. We're required to balance it. Not like other entities that can't balance it. We will balance it. There may be tough choices, we'll have to make those tough choices. But we also have the obligation to look at what this city is going to be in the future and make sure that the operating expenditures that we pass on to future councils are as low as they can be, that we give them as many degrees of freedom as we can. And when you start putting all those factors together, this becomes the right fiscal decision. Because over the last couple of years, we've pushed the city forward. We've invested in the infrastructure of this city. We've invested in the police force. We've invested in the fire department. All of those pieces and never raised taxes. And it was always a balanced budget. And it's going to be a much stronger city in several years because of the work of this council than, to be truthful with you, some of the challenges that we had when we came in. So I think the right decision is to go forward. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ms. Hunt. The objection will be noted in the record. Madam Secretary, I think that brings us to item number 43.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 43 is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions and the evaluation and duties of board and commission members. You have for your consideration both individual appointments, full council appointments, and board officers. Nominated to the Landmark Commission for the historian position is Robert Asbury by Councilmember Atkins. That is your individual appointment. For full council appointment, you have nominated J.B. Jones as a registered voter to the Reinvestment Zone 15 Board Fort Worth Avenue by Councilmember Newman. To the Southern Dallas Development Corporation Board is Eric Blue, nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. For vice chair to the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission, you have Brett Ferguson, nominated by Councilmember Coop. Mattia James Fabiano III is nominated as vice chair to the Landmark Commission by Councilmember Coop. Kenneth Martin is nominated to the RZ04 Cedars RZ Board as vice chair by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. Beverly Tobian, RZ09 Vickery Meadows, nominated as vice chair by council members Coop and Margolin.
Ms. Coop, please.
Mr. Robert, I want to make sure I
the entire sheet that you gave us then, or is that what you just read?
The entire sheet with your nomination on the landmark.
Right, okay. Then I move approval of the appointments and the entire sheet is presented.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, item 44, please.
Item number 44 is authorize a contract for facility pavement repairs to the Northeast Transfer Station located at 7677 Fair Oaks Avenue, Southwest Transfer Station located at 4610 Westmoreland Road, and the McComas Bluff Landfill located at 5100 Youngblood Road. Councilmember Newman.
Mr. Newman, please. Mr. Mayor, Council, I move to delay this 6 months from today.
It's
been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. We'll now go on the regular addendum, items 45 to 47, and back over on the addendum 12 and 13. These all require an additional second, so we'll require 2 seconds. And by making the second, the council member who makes that second will represent that they have undertaken sufficient examination involvement beyond reviewing agenda materials to be knowledgeable about the facts and circumstances of the case and be able to develop an opinion based on such examination that there is facts and issues involved. Madam Secretary, item number 46, please. 45 was deleted on the addendum. 46, please.
Item number 46 is authorized acquisition of one parcel improved with an occupied residential structure located at 2435 Hooper Street from Elise Simpson for the proposed Bexar Street redevelopment project.
With no discussion, a motion, please. Ms. Davis?
Yes. Mayor, I move to approve item number 46.
Okay. It's been seconded by Ms. Hill and by Mr. Atkins. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any objections? So ordered. Item 47, please.
Item number 47 is authorized moving expense and replacement housing payments for Alvy and Bertie White to purchase real property at 2414 Hooper Street to be used in conjunction with the Bexar Street redevelopment project as part of the Neighborhood Investment Program.
Mayor, I move to approve item number 47.
Seconded and seconded by Mr. Atkins and Mr. Salazar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, item number 12, please. On the addendum.
Addendum item number 12 is authorized number 1, amendments to the Dallas Development Fund Certificates of Formation and Bylaws, and number 2, the city manager to file the amended Certificate of Formation with the Secretary of State.
Ms. Margolin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think this is a great program. The federal government is funding tax credits so that we can do construction in lower-income neighborhoods, and that's very positive. What I'm concerned about with this is just the complex nature of what it is that we have to create in the way of nonprofits, for-profit corporations, boards, and how we have to keep this at arm's length from the city council by requirement. And so I'm looking for as much reassurance as I can get that the liability to the city is going to be minimal, or whatever liability is there we recognize and we'll do everything in our power to mitigate, to make sure that every I is dotted, every T is crossed, that the developers that we work with understand that, so that 5 years from now or 3 years from now, there's nothing coming back to the city saying that we owe back millions of dollars. And I'm looking for somebody to come up here and say that we are doing everything in our power to mitigate that kind of risk.
We're doing everything in our power to mitigate that risk. Ms. Margolin, the point I would make on this is that we are already administering tax credit programs. We're administering low-income housing tax credit programs in the housing department. We're doing historical tax credits in our development services area. And the administrative risk relative to this program doesn't really differ from that. In addition, we are bringing on consultants, lawyers, accountants, structuring consultants. The council will have the opportunity to approve those consultants as we complete the RFPs to select them.
Where
where is the greatest risk? Is it in choosing developers who don't proceed properly with the project, or is it in errors that we make?
I think the greatest risk in a generic sense is if there's a taxable event that occurs during that 7-year tax credit period that would cause additional liability to the investors. With regard to the projects, each of these projects will be individually underwritten. They will come to the council for approval. So we'll have several approval levels there in addition to the administrative safeguards. But the actual greatest risk relates to a taxable event.
Give me an example of a taxable event.
Well, if a project fails, or if there is administrative malfeasance that causes the tax credit to lose its eligibility, then that would be a taxable event.
And then the city could be liable to refund money.
Well, not automatically, but I think in something like this, when people lose money, everybody ends up in a legal dispute.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ashton, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess HC, maybe the city managing council is, on this addendum, the city manager is going to do amending to this Dallas Development Fund deal, Mayor. Why are we doing amending? The reason why. AC? You know, we are amending the bylaws.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the...
You said authorize amendment to the Dallas Development Fund, the bylaws, the city of Dallas manager filed amendment with the Secretary of State. So why? What is the purpose of that? Clarification.
Mr. Atkins, the reason that we are amending the bylaws is that the state constitution doesn't allow a municipality to create a for-profit entity. And so we are the first, or one of the first municipalities in the state to make use of this program. There needs to be a for-profit entity to accept the credits, so we had to structure it in a way in the way that amended the bylaws to permit us to do that.
And back to Ann's question, there's the liability. The reason why we're doing that, so we know that every project got to come before council before we do approval, so therefore we know we limit our liability. And the developer is more liable than us. That first in line, is that correct?
Well, yes. We actually envisioned it all the way throughout the process that it would be coming back to the council. What there was some specific language that was needed to be included that was a little bit different in the formation of the corporations in order to be consistent with the state constitution. And that was really the driving force of having this amendment. It was always our intention to be having these consultants and the deals come to the council, and it will be still that case.
Okay, with the timeline, the chart that you first gave us a couple months ago, you know, this is the procedure. Would that change? Would that bylaw be in that timeline chart?
No,
the
timeline is the same. As a matter of fact, we have to accept the allocation by the 15th of February. That would keep us on the same timeline.
So the org chart, which you had in the past, that you got it before your project, you got to come before city council, before the board appoint, and before the board vote on the taxes, whatever, is that the same timeline?
Oh, yes, that's exactly the same. We just changed the structure to conform with state law.
So whatever structure you put on state law, could you give me a copy, get all the colleagues when you insert that little piece there?
Surely.
So I know we're falling in line.
Surely.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I will be supportive.
Thank you very much. Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. AC or Carl, it says that the Class 1 directors must vote unanimously in all matters related to the investment deal decision. That is to protect what? First of all, is that an enforceable position? Second of all, tell me what the nature of that.
Well, what it does is that we're keeping the same directors on the board. And it just means that the Class 1 directors who are being appointed by the city manager...
Class 1 are city
appointed? Class 1 are city appointed.
Okay.
Appointed by the city manager. Class 2 are self-appointed by the board.
Okay.
So there has to be a unanimous vote of the Class 1 directors for each deal or for any type of bylaw change that would modify the powers of the Class 1 directors. Additionally, there has to be one of the self-appointed directors that has to join those three Class 1 directors in any decision relating to a deal or to a bylaw change.
And the whole purpose of us setting up this entity is to set up an entity that's basically one step away from the city, correct?
That's so that the city is not creating a for-profit.
Okay, so the city's not in a for-profit. I get that. So, and I think this is fine. I'm supportive. Here's the question. Can we achieve that by creating this high level of this voting requirement? That's still all? That passes legal muster. Because it's almost comes across as though we're saying it's independent, we're saying the city's not involved in the for-profit, but all of our city people have to approve it as directors.
Well,
I'm being a little sarcastic, but do you see?
No, you're catching the nuance that is there, that is us attempting from a legal standpoint to be creative and make sure that it complies not only with the state constitution, but also with the council's desire to make sure that there is some level of control by the city. So there is a delicate balance that, no question, is something that is different, but it's that creativity that is allowing us to move forward.
And I think that's good. So, I've used the term nimble once before, but I was told not to use that anymore. That's Mary. Christmas party a year ago, she said, okay, we get the nimble thing, Newman. I think it's good, being nimble. Are there any other boards or commissions that we have set up with this same level, high level of voting threshold?
To my knowledge, this is different because we had to, by federal statute, we had to create a for-profit corporation here to accept the allocation. So this is a little bit different.
I get that. I'm saying, Carl, I'm saying, is there any other voting requirement that we require unanimous voting, or is this the first one?
To my knowledge, this is different in that respect.
Okay. The LGCs that we have set up, they don't have that sort of requirement?
No, again, it's just reiterating, this is very special.
Okay. All right. Mayor, I'm supportive. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Second?
Yeah. Moved and seconded. We've made a lot of motions in second. We'll just let the secretary figure out who in there
is.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, 13.
Addendum item number 13 is authorize a loan in the amount of $2 million at 2% interest of FC Continental to FC Continental Complex LP for the acquisition of property located at 1810 Commerce Street and for conversion of the vacant commercial building into 199 residential rental units and 5,000 square feet of retail space in accordance with the Downtown Connection Tax Increment Finance and District Project Plan and Reinvestment Zone Financing Plan. Councilmember Mark Owen.
Please.
Thank you. Originally I was pulling this, but I forgot it's not on the consent agenda, so I didn't need to pull it. But to be consistent with my ongoing opposition to this, I'll be voting against it.
Okay.
Move approval.
Ms. Salazar moved it. Ms. Hill seconded it. I need another second. Mr. Atkins. Ms. Newman, please.
Very respectful of Ms. Margolin's opposition. She's been consistent as it relates to this project and this financing. Has the staff, I don't know if that's to Carl or Jerry or AC, has the staff any other new information
that I don't want to say rebuts, I want to say responds to the council members' concern? If there's not any new information, then there's not any new information. Looks like there's not any new information. Mayor, I'm just wondering, I've heard Ms. Margolin's concern about it along the way, and any new information, or it is what it is? Okay. Is that what you're saying? Okay. Thank you.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, so ordered. I'm sorry, Ms. Margolin, her opposition will be noted. I apologize for that. That completes our morning agenda. We'll reconvene at 1 o'clock.
Mayor.
Please.
Mayor, Carol Sewell, at noon today in the flag lawn. You going to say that? Go ahead.
No, I was going to go to you. I was going to invite everybody to join us at 11:50, and go ahead.
For the world-renowned Carter High School Marching Band. They were invited and participated in the New York City Veterans Day Parade in November. I thought it appropriate to bring them to us since they've gone to the world. They will be here at noon in the flag room. Please join us for the Carter Cowboys Marching Band. Thank you, Mr.
Cowboys. Well done. As I said, we'll have that. So everybody's invited to join us at 11:50 in the flag room for that. This brings us to the close of our morning agenda. We'll reconvene at 1 o'clock for the afternoon zoning cases. Right now, what we'll do is we'll go into an executive session. We'll go ahead and get that out of the way right now. It is now 10:38 on January 27th of 2010. The City Council will now go in to closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters that have been described on the agenda: Davis versus Dallas, Holiday versus Dallas, and Dallas versus Byrne et al. And again, we will reconvene in here at 1 o'clock. Thank you. Okay, why don't we take our seats and we'll begin the afternoon session. Mr. Caraway, did you want just a minute? Mr. Caraway?
Meeting reconvened at 1 o'clock.
Thank you, Mayor. Just one point of personal privilege. I'd like for Jordan Blair with the Elite News, if he would come down. Mayor, you know, during the parade, yourself, myself, and Councilman Natinsky and Councilman Jerry Allen, and I think we were even entertaining this idea with Councilwoman Margolin, and we were talking about challenging the Royce West was in the parade with us, State Senator Royce West, and they wanted to challenge the Dallas City Council to a benefit celebrity basketball game. Now,
I want to leave the celebrity part out.
Well, no, we have to keep celebrity in there just because we got you. And here's what we are going to do. We're going to accept that challenge, and my office was asked to coordinated, and we are currently putting the plans together. So we're going to need our cheerleaders that's our lady council members to be our cheerleaders because we're going to take it to the state, and we're going to win the game. And with that, we're going to
need a player under 60 on your team?
Yeah, we go ahead. But here's the deal. We are going to take the proceeds, and Mayor, did we say we were going to donate the proceeds to Haiti? And that's what our goal and our mission is to put our team together, and we're going to challenge the state legislators to a basketball game with the benefits going to all the proceeds going to the Haiti relief. Now, with that, this Saturday at American Airlines, more importantly, as well, the Harlem Globetrotters are coming to town, and they will be here. And Jordan, if you would come up, Mr. Blair, we have a special presentation from the Harlem Globetrotters, and Mayor, it's being presented to you. For some reason, they called from Chicago, and they are looking to have you there, but they wanted to make a special presentation from the Harlem Globetrotters. And Tom up in Chicago, they are listening and watching, and we want to make sure that they know that we're excited about them. They are offering to all of our, not to all of our rec centers, but we put the word out to the council members, and Councilwoman Medrano and others have accepted that. We want to make sure that we benefit and send some kids, Mayor. So we want to send some kids. So if you have some kids that would like to go this Saturday at 11 o'clock at American Airlines, give us that list. But Mr. Blair?
Yes. If Jameer and the Mayor Pro Tem would come on down right quick, we take a quick picture. But on behalf, I'm Jordan Blair, the proud publisher of the largest African-American newspaper in North Texas. I'm just glad to be here today. And thank you for the job that you do as a council. And, you know, this year and the last year, we haven't had a lot of stuff happening because you're doing a good job, and we appreciate you for that. But on behalf of the Globetrotters, partnering with them to send kids to the game, a little education and all of the things we, Georgia Browns, they've done in the past, they wanted to honor the mayor and the mayor pro tem with an honorary captainship for the game on Saturday at 11 a.m. And I just came down to present these tickets to them, 100 tickets that will go to some of the kids in the community and also to do some goodwill. And we thank you for that. And I'm just glad to be a partner with the Globetrotters, not only for what they stand for, but they've been a good organization for a long time. And on behalf of the Elite News and the Globetrotters, I'm going to present this ball to the mayor and the mayor pro tem along with these 100 tickets. And we do have, I think, another 200 tickets coming to give to some kids. Thank y'all so very much, and thank you for the job that you do.
Thank goodness.
Hey, all
right.
Here's
the thing. Somebody else was wrong. We got to get
that with the bomb.
If she gets
the key, that's a loss. Give me the bomb.
Her baby.
I got it. Hold on a little bit.
We appreciate the tickets very much. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Thank you. You hear that, Rose?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 48, considered also as an individual item, is a public hearing regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a planned development district for a public school other than an open enrollment charter school and R-5A single family district uses on property zoned an R-5A single family district in a CH clustered housing district on the south line of Camp Wisdom Road between Houston School Road and Lancaster Road.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 49 notices. Property owners with a 500 feet area request received 4 replies in favor, 1 reply in opposition. Require a simple majority to approve this.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? Any speakers in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve? Are there any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins, please.
Mr. Compton, come forward, please. Well, Mayor, you know, this is a great project. I don't know if my colleagues realize what we're doing here. Is this a piece of property that we're swapping out, Dave, for the new Dallas-Benton School District, or is this something that we changed in our plan?
Yes, sir. This site itself was part of the negotiations with UNT, who had agreed and actually desired to have a DISD campus on site. This is the site that will be developed as that campus.
And, Colin, if you don't know, the University of North Texas at Dallas is going to have a second building this year. And that's great. It's a great thing to come to the southern sector, but also you might not be aware of Dallas-Benton School District is going to put a high school, a prep high school, on the University UAT at City of Dallas also. And what we're going to do is by changing some setback on this amendment, and this is why I would require the Dallas Fenton School District to make sure they have the right setback for the feet yardage from the Dallas Fenton School District. And in 2012, Dallas Fenton School District stated that they will have a new prep high school on the UNT campus. And I move to close the public hearing and follow the City Plan Commission recommendation for approval with the following changes. The Miller side yard for all use of other than single family is 15 feet. So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, 49, please.
Item number 49 is a public hearing regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a renewal of specific use permit number 1691 for a bar, lounge, or tavern on property zoned Plan Development District Number 269, the Deep Ellum Near East Side Special Purpose District on the southwest line of Exposition Avenue east of Ash Lane.
Mr. Mayor, we sent 12 notices to property owners within 203 their request, received two replies in favor and one reply in opposition, and requires a majority to approve this.
Thank you.
We do have two speakers signed up to speak on this item. The first speaker is David Gibson, followed by Gene Dennis. Individuals do have 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice a little light over at the podium. When the light turns red, please allow the next individual their turn. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is David Gibson. My address is 820 Exposition Avenue, Suite 1.
Yeah. Thank you.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Honorable Mayor, Dallas City Council, we've been quietly building a loft community in Deep Ellum for the last 30 years. The first real estate acquisition was in 1979. The most recent is 2009. Loft conversions began in 1982, made possible by the Deep Ellum PD 2069. We worked with Lee Sandberg on the PD and supported the passage. Of the 18 buildings in our loft community, major investments have been made in 14, of which two are Dallas landmarks and on the National Register of Historic Places. The community totals approximately 350,000 square feet of leasable space. Our properties are landscaped throughout, softening a masonry environment. Alleys have been converted to gardens. The Goodyear building has a swimming pool. The current tax appraisal on the properties is $15 million, generating a tax revenue of $240,000. There are 180 lofts from 500 feet to 8,000 feet. Our daily population is around 300. 150 are residential. The rest are business. We have 5 architectural firms. We have a graphics brokerage firm, three graphic internet companies, 2 ad agencies, 10 photographers, and many others. Our longest-term tenant, 500X, celebrated its 30th anniversary last year as the oldest artist-run gallery in Texas. 500X alumni are actively serving throughout the state and around the country. Last year, UTD Dallas opened their artist residency program in the former Dallas post office, and we provided the space. A successful mink dance club and bar promotes activities out of the context with this loft community that we've built. It upsets the peace and harmony of our residents, and trash left behind is for us to clean up. Mink should be located far from a residential and business community. Please deny this SUP. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Gene Dennis.
My name is Gene Dennis for the Gibson Company. Address 820 Exposition, Dallas, 75226. Good afternoon. And I would just like to express some of the things that we have been doing down there for the last 20, 30 years, and that basically means a crime. We're constantly after the crime and the crime reduction, and, you know, we've been able to create something that probably nowhere else in Dallas, and you guys probably recognize this or not, that the Gold Star thing that we acquired recently. That's not because there's a bunch of nightclubs and bars and so forth around. It's because we as a community have created an atmosphere that is safe and desirable for residential situations. But when you start bringing the clubs in, which, you know, there's a history behind this club, and my understanding is with an SUP it goes with the property and not the person. And the history behind this is that there have been probably three clubs in there in my time down in on Exposition, and all three of them have been an extreme detriment. And I remember one of them was so bad that the owner got called down to the police, and the police and fire departments called them down to have a discussion on their activities, and there were some serious things going on, drugs and so forth. But no way that you can convince me that a club is going to help in any way. And, you know, I'm not trying to push this guy out or you know, be the bad guy, but I'm hoping you can see beyond what one person wants to do and what, you know, as a community that we're trying to do. And, of course, the parking is a whole other situation, and I'm hoping that this will somewhat convince people, the council, to look at it in another direction. But I understand also that it is not a big deal, you guys, and you've got to help everybody. Anyway, thank you. If you've got any questions, just feel free to ask.
Appreciate it, sir.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? Any speakers in the audience in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve? Any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? Please step forward. Again, individuals will be allowed.
Look, how many do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay.
Thank you. Please, when you step forward, please state your name and address for the record. We would ask that if you have not already, go ahead and fill out a speaker's card that will allow us to keep your name and address information on the record in case we need to get in touch with you. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I will do that. I have not at this point. Thank you all for your time. Again, we do, last time we were here 2 weeks ago, I did pass out a petition that was signed for that particular neighborhood, as well as got some letters signed for some of the people who attend our venue, as well as the, like I said, the petition, which is signed by a lot of the people who live in that neighborhood that actually come to our facility. They moved to that area because there was activity in that area. We have zero children in that area, none in that area at all. That district is zoned for exactly what we have. There's an industrial zonage, and we want to continue to host live events and do good things for the city of Dallas, as well as create commerce and jobs, revenue for people of the city of Dallas. It's a great venue for socializing and networking, and that's what we want to continue to hold it as. And I do appreciate it, and I want to get our SUP approved. Thanks, sir.
Any other speakers, please step forward.
And then why don't you have whoever's going to be speaking next come on down right now and just sit in the front row. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Ulysses Rusher. I live at 839 Exposition, apartment number 3, Dallas, Texas, 75226. I've been a business owner in the area for about 6.5 years. I'm there every day. The first thing that they mentioned last week is that parking might possibly be an issue. The reason why I want to state that it's not really true is every weekend that we're there, 178 parking spaces aren't being utilized, which are adjacent to the main parking lot. Although your businesses are having 70 to 80% of their occupancy filled, there's still more than adequate and sufficient parking in the area. The second reason that this old building was built in 1909 doesn't require to have a lot of parking is because these variances were in place because this is pre-automobile, 1909. And so Dallas has to figure out whether or not they're going to allow alternative means of transportation, such as the DART train station, which is up the block. As Mr. Gibson said earlier, there are a substantial amount of people that live in the area, and these people actually come to the businesses in this block. The historic usage for this area has been for the last 10, 15, 20, 50, 100 years, has been four things predominantly. It's been dance halls, bar and lounges, restaurants, and art galleries. In the last 20 to 30 years, there's been a lot of development going on, which is trying to change what the historic usages are. I don't think that Dallas has to choose one or the other. I think that both can live in harmony. These businesses and establishments provide a viable economic means for the city. Out of the small businesses, bar and lounges that are on that block that have been there since I've been there and longer, I think Mr. Gibson mentioned there was 270-some thousand in taxes. This is close to $1 million in mixed beverage gross tax receipts, 14%. And that's only on that one block. Not to mention all the businesses that we've lost in the last 10 years in Deep Ellum. There used to be 50 to 60 different type of restaurants, bars, clubs, live music venues. They're all gone. They dried up, and it's a ghost town. So historic usage does allow for it. The last thing that I'd like to mention is that since Mixed's been gone, and I mentioned this last year, the graffiti and tagging in the area has gone up substantially. I have an officer, Sergeant Briscoe, that can corroborate my story, along with other residents in the area. Instead of cleaning this stuff up once a week or once a month, it's once a week now. Half the block is empty now. There's less visibility, less viability, less people walking on the streets, and this is making it more difficult for the business owners that are there to keep it going. So I'd appreciate if you guys would approve for this SUP.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it.
Next speaker, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Elise Isom, and I am here on behalf of the Mink Lounge. As a realtor here in the Dallas area, I have had the opportunity to come down to the Mink Lounge on a number of occasions for a number of different events. Events such as corporate Christmas parties, just a place for my husband and I to come down and unwind. I have had the opportunity to be afforded the opportunity of coming down to this place to network with clients who are looking for places in this area based on the different activities that are going around town. So I am here on behalf of the Mink Lounge and in favor of the Mink Lounge and asking that you all will allow them to reopen their doors for business. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Next speaker, please.
My name is Woody Rosen. I live at 3809 Perry, number 215, Dallas, Texas, 75226. I'd just like to say that I've been a resident of the area for the better part of 3 years. I feel that Mink is an asset to the area, that, you know, there's no issues that I've seen ever there, and I think with the push to revive Deep Ellum, you know, a place like this is in line with that sort of vision that the city has got in mind, and I'd just like to say that I'm in support of this SUP.
Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
Good afternoon, City Council. My name is Selvin DeLeon. I live and work at 101 South Walton, Dallas, Texas, 75236. I do agree with the approval of this permit. And the reason why is because I see that Tim Austin has the potential to bring life to this neighborhood known as Exposition Park. And it's a very classic business model, bringing people back to the neighborhood, helping the local businesses. As a very tried and true method of just bringing people back to the neighborhood would be a big benefit, as true crime be prevented and also money spent in the area. As for the parking, Dark Rail has really helped out a lot, and now people as myself that prefer to walk or even ride a bike don't really are concerned with vehicle or parking. So all this led for Mr. Tim Austin to be able to move forward with a good business plan to create jobs and revenue for the city as your approval. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other speakers that would like to speak in favor of the CPC recommendation? Sir, please step up to the podium. If you'll go ahead and, if you have not already, please fill out a speaker card after you're done. Thank you. Please say your name and address.
My name is Christian Ward. I'm actually the master control operator for Trinity Broadcasting Network and also a DJ and producer in the area. I appeal to you on a different level. Meek is a hub for international DJs. I'm actually from the Washington, D.C. area, and I knew about this establishment before I moved here. It actually has more international implications than even local people actually realize. The current staff there, Tim Austin, who I'm kind of, since I'm a DJ, I do perform there on occasion, and I'm also a producer of events. I work with Art Love Magic, which you probably know from Deep Bellum. And they've opened the door so I can throw art shows there. One of the most successful events that we've thrown there was the art show. We, a couple hundred people, and we tried to work with the galleries in the area, but, you know, some of them didn't know me. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. And with the idea to revive Deep Bellum, that location is a staple. It's well known. I just want you guys to really to view it as that. It's just as much as a staple as, you know, Cowboy Stadium, but it's known around the world. And I just wanted to bring that to your attention. And I also wanted to bring a more fiscal idea to you in regards to the tax revenue loss. And I understand that the council members are sharing staff members because of the money that, you know, the money allocated to them per year for staff. And I believe that some of you that are sharing secretaries, revenue that could have been generated just for the time it's been closed could have paid for, you know, staff members on your staff. So I just thank you for your time. Once again, my name is Christian Ward.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council. My name is Daniel Prescott. I am the President of Services of Hope Entities, a faith-based educational entity that I am in Councilwoman Angela Hunt's District 13. But I'm speaking on behalf and in favor of Tim Austin's Mink Lounge. My organization, we host our annual parties and annual events there at Mink Lounge. And I attribute it to going into Deep Ellum, where there is no real true parking, and you have to pay for parking down in Deep Ellum. And next to Mr. Austin's establishment is a paid public parking lot, where my staff and I and our guests have always paid to park there. So if we're going to deny his request, I think we have to deny the request of all the establishments in Deep Ellum, where you have to park and where they will tow you and boot you. And he's not had that problem. But number two, he's bringing economic development to a city that says it's pro-business, and we go all over the world trying to recruit businesses to come here, and we're trying to deny a local business to have a good establishment, but also to employ and to pay taxes, and our tax base is down because of businesses. So if we are a business city, we should all be in favor of Mr. Austin. And the number three reason, we're trying to revitalize the Fair Park South Dallas area. We've said that that is our biggest land resource, our biggest place that we can do business there, and now a business wants to come, and we're saying, no, you can't come because there's an adequate parking. Well, I just paid to park across the street. There's not adequate parking at City Hall. So should we deny people coming here? I think that this measure, based on our pro-business stance, should be passed. Again, thank you very much for your time and for the opportunity to speak on his behalf. We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Mayor, City Council members, my name is John Roberts. I reside at 4717 Veracruz in Garland, Texas. I am the landowner of the building in question. I spoke 2 weeks ago and told you some of the things that we've had in there. Some of them have been good, some of them bad. I don't go to bars and lounges, but I firmly believe in this establishment. So far, when it shut down, they haven't paid a bit of rent. That's how firmly I believe in the place. I think it's in harmony with Mr. Gibson's activity to have this type of establishment represented in the city of Dallas. As far as parking goes, we have a parking agreement. We've paved a lot and it meets all city requirements as far as number of spaces, been inspected by the building inspection department, be registered this afternoon. So there's no illegal activity as far as parking that is required by the city of Dallas. I'm in favor of the issue fee, obviously, as the landowner, because I think it does bring a real unique venue to the city in that area. I think it's a benefit to the Exposition Park, and hope that you approve this SUP. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Ms. Davis, please.
Teresa, thank you, Mayor. Teresa, will you please come forward, please? I have just a couple of questions I want to ask Teresa. Thank you, Teresa. Within the next 1 to 2 years, we've talked and I'm going to be asking you to look at all the parking down in that area. For the most part, most of the area does not have a CO when it comes to parking. Am I correct?
It would appear that way, that some of the property owners have been laxed in meeting all the requirements.
Okay. And but within a year to two, starting perhaps the end of this year, we're going to start getting with some of the business owners down there and asking them to bring, or the parking lot owners to bring parking lot up to zoning, which require a CO. Am I correct?
That's right, ma'am. We've had those discussions with code that we will ask those property owners, give them a specified time frame, let them know
absolutely
that paving, lighting, landscaping, all those types of things need to be in order.
Okay, and I think that would help enhance that area. The next thing, I want to talk about the owner of the building. There is, Mr. Austin, there is graffiti on that building now. What does he plan to do to deal with the graffiti on the building? Yes, please.
We plan on painting the building, of course, to try to get rid of all the graffiti as well. We do believe in making sure that the neighborhood looks nice and it is clean. So that's a part of what we're going to do is paint the building.
Now, when do you plan to open the facility?
We still have some other licenses that we have to acquire. So we are probably looking at the first week of April as our target date. So it gives us some time to do some renovations and do some painting and get the building exactly where we want it to be.
Okay. Now we also, security. Will you have security during your business hours?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. As well as myself, because I came up through the security ranks myself, but I do have a supervisor who deals with just the security aspect of our facility. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I have made my decision. I move to close the public hearing and approve this SUP for 1 year. Now, there is some things I'd like to add to it. No dance floor and no dance club.
We don't have a dance floor, no ma'am.
Okay. I'd like to make sure we add that. And also, we continue to talk about parking. I would like for you to get with, I think Fair Park charges $10 to park on their parking lot.
Yes.
To get with the fair and to find out the hours of operation to kind of move some of that traffic off of Exposition and to park into the fair. Are you willing to deal with that?
Well, yes, ma'am.
Okay, then. And I think you can call the Friends of Fair Park and get with Craig to work that out. You also said that you will have security there. Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you will get the graffiti off the wall.
Yes, ma'am.
Up that side of the building. Also, one more thing. And you talked to me about the hours, and I can work with you on the hours. I was asking for 12 o'clock, but since you open at 9, from anywhere from 8 to 9, then we would do on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 2, and then Mondays and Tuesdays 6 to 1. Okay. So, ask for approval.
I'm sorry, Ms. Davis. May I just have a point of clarification? Your 1 year, would that be from today's date, from April, or from January, which is?
When they open up.
When they open,
April. Uh-huh. That would be, Mr. Austin said April the 1st, with those requirements.
Opening date. And whichever that opening date would be, if it's beyond April 1st,
Mr. Nitschke, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. O'Donnell, there were a couple things that were said by the speakers that were both, well, from the building owner and several other people that concerned me to some degree, not specifically with this, but they concerned me in a larger picture. A statement was made that, and I think you confirmed it, that property owners have been somewhat lax in getting proper COs for buildings in the area? Was that referring to the parking lots?
Parking lots.
Okay. So I guess I have to ask the question. We're aware that they don't have COs for the parking lots, and yet we have not been. Is this newly discovered? I'm concerned by that, because if we've got things on the books, we've got ordinances, it's just not fair to let people be lax, because in the end, I think it's going to come back and harm us. So tell me when we discovered that they were lax, or that they didn't have COs, and how lax have we been?
Last week.
Okay.
We started looking, and this was purely information that we were pulling right out of the computer. We did not have the time to actually do a field inventory given the quick turnaround, but what we could draw from our computer records is that some of the COs are out of date, some have expired, some are on half the property, not all the property, and we've been in conversations with Mr. Zapata, and we're planning a code and BI review of all these lots, make sure that we have accurate information, start to work with those property owners to come into compliance.
Okay. Well, I'm certainly not advocating that we just close them down because they don't have a CO. I think we do need to work with them, but I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that we do need a response and we need compliance with the code. And as long as, you know, BI and the code department get a feeling that we're working toward that in a relatively short period of time, because in my mind, this is not a multi-year cure. This is maybe a couple of months cure. Shouldn't take long to get lighting and striping and other things fixed up, you know, in the parking lot. You know, I kind of have mixed emotions about this particular case, because I've got several similar issues in my part of town, and I know I've talked to you about this, Teresa. There does not seem to be a direct relationship between the number of people that the building is certified for occupancy with, in other words, the square footage, versus the parking, versus the operation. Has that just come up in the last little while, or why is that all of a sudden becoming a problem where you have retail types of uses that end up being used? And I'm not trying to be anti-club, that's not it, but you take a club that, and I have one in my area that by the city's fire code allows, you know, 2,500 people to fit in there. They have a formula. Everybody gets 1.5 square feet or whatever it is. And that seems to be somewhat disconnected from not only parking, but impact on the adjoining neighborhood. Because you put that many people in any kind of a location. You're opening yourself up to having those impacts flow over to adjoining businesses and adjoining neighborhoods. So I think, you know, from my perspective, I think that's where Mr. Gibson's concern should be focused. I'm not purporting to be speaking for him, because the whole Deep Elm area, I think, needs to have mixed use. It needs to have clubs. It needs to have residential and all that stuff. And we've just got to strike the right balance so that we don't find any particular element of that mixed use being detrimental to the others. And it's kind of like, you know, go along to get along. So is that something we need to look at rather than, I mean, we've been focused on the parking of this, and I don't know that the parking really is that much of an issue. I'm having more of an issue of taking a huge number of people and allowing them to be, you know, in a certain size business, whether it's this club or another club. I'm not picking on this one, but that seems to be an issue, because then those effects overflow into the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Am I making any sense?
Yes, you absolutely are, and I know this is a constant struggle for Councilwoman Hunt on Greenville Avenue, is the definition of bar, lounge, or tavern, definition of restaurant, definition of a dance club, how we park those in relation to the occupancy, and I know it's been a struggle.
I think that your department needs to begin working on that, from the respect that I think we have all been focused on trying to come up with correct parking ratios and remote parking and valet parking and all that sort of stuff. And it's all been based on a use basis. In other words, what our categories are.
And
there seems to be a disconnect, though, from another department that issues the number of people that can be there. And I think we need to get all of that together so that we can come up with whatever the proper recommendations are. So I would certainly like to see if you can move forward with that. I'm going to go ahead and support this, because Ms. Davis has put a relatively, you know, short period of time, and I think it's incumbent upon Mr. Austin to prove that he can be a good neighbor during that time, and that the club can be a good neighbor and maybe dispel some of, you know, Mr. Gibson's concerns. And if that doesn't happen, then we'll be seeing this case, you know, before us again, and I'll have an opportunity to oppose it, or say, you know, as Mr. Pedrano says, say I told you so. I hope that's not the case. I hope it does work out. But so based on that, I am going to support it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Teresa, the write-up in front of us that came through to the Planning Commission says that on January 14, 2009, that it was a one-year renewal. So this request in front of us is for a renewal of an existing SUP, correct?
Yes, sir, and that's why I needed to make sure that I understood that her renewal was not for a year, because that would be from January. It's actually
from January 14th,
yes.
If it was renewed. Okay. So the clarification from the councilwoman was 1 year from
April. The day they opened.
The day they opened. Okay. So clarify. This business has not opened yet?
It has not opened.
What was the SUP that the council approved a year before for then?
Same thing. But it was subject to him securing his parking, and he's had an extraordinarily difficult time deed restricting that parking.
So what is the police report is the police report then that is in the case file that we have in front of us is not relevant specific to this location, or it's a larger location?
Yeah, that's right, sir. Because he's not been in operation at this at this location.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be supportive of Ms. Davis. I think I would agree with Mr. Natinsky. I think this is a classic definition of a mixed-use area opportunity. And I'm hesitant about 1 year versus 2 years, but I mean, I very much respect the deference for Ms. Davis to say, let's see how this works and how it's going to impact the neighborhood. What's the transactional cost of applying for an SUP?
$825.
So the applicant's time, energy, and that sort of thing, plus $825 check to the city.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So upon this expiration of the one-year SUP, presumably he goes through this whole process again with the fee and so forth.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Thank you, ma'am.
There was a quizzical look on the applicant when that came up.
Okay. Well, I take their number, sir. Their number is lower than your number.
Okay. Mr. Galloway, please.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Newman. And thank you, Ms. Davis, for your reconsideration of this. And I do have some concern, just as Mr. Natansky and Mr. Newman, as related to the 1 year. But it is something that is going to be able to come back, and we will have an opportunity to review. It's like walking into a bank needing a $100,000 loan, and you can only get $10,000, so it kind of strangles you a little bit. We understand that. But at the same token, deal with what you have to deal with at this particular time. Be that operator, and then come back, and let's share some success stories. But I want to commend Ms. Davis, because Ms. Davis has thoroughly kept her hand on the pulse of this thing, and her reconsideration and us reconsidering this today only shows that she cares for her community and she has a pulse of what's going on. So, Ms. Davis, thank you. But let me just ask a couple more things, and just for my own edification, I would like to know how many clubs are in this immediate area, because we don't have the map in front of us, but I'm a little familiar with this, and to the owner of the property, it's a building, because now where the Club Mink is, at the back of that building, at the very front, at one point it was Clara's Kitchen in the old days, and that's right across from the Fair Park. Is that all the same building, one building? If you would, come down and kind of help me with it. And if you understand the question is from the back of his building up to the front of where Clara's Kitchen used to be.
I think I do, Mr. Carroway.
Okay.
It is exactly the same building. It used to be, or I guess it's still called Exposition Park.
Okay.
Which is across the street from Mr. Gibson's property.
Okay.
Most of the buildings in there are small, anywhere from 3,000 to ours, which is actually 2811 and 813, which is 6,500 square feet. But there's a number of things. There's hair cutting shops.
Absolutely.
Coffee shops.
Right.
Clara's Kitchen used to be there.
It's right.
Now a sandwich shop.
Right.
I think New Amsterdam is a coffee shop which serves alcohol.
So how many tenants do you have in this one configuration of the building?
How many tenants? I only own one building.
Oh, so you only own the one
right.
portion of
the building. They are individually owned, unlike Mr. Gibson's, where he owns everything and rents it out to people. I own one building. That's all we're talking about.
And how many parking lots that services one building, even though there are different owners in this one block? And to the council colleagues, may not know,
there's
like a Walmart store, but with different businesses all through the Walmart, and you're saying with different owners of different parts of the building.
Best I can tell you is Park America owns a paid parking lot next to my building.
That's in the back.
No, that's on Exposition next to it.
Okay, on the side.
If you look behind it, there are two, maybe three more paid parking lots.
Okay.
Fair Park parking is across the street from behind us. And the 11 spaces that we're required to have to comply with city codes are located on 2nd Avenue, which have been paved, lighted, and meet all the inspections.
So, but it's like, is it safe to say that this would be like an executive office building with everybody in that building having to have to share those two or three parking lots?
Everybody in that complex of buildings.
In that complex of buildings.
Yes, are parking in that facility.
Are parking in that and those few parking lots that we have there.
That's correct.
Okay, and that's where I kind of have a no problem. I needed that clarification from you.
Okay.
So thank you. And where I somewhat have a problem is that we have several businesses with COs and that require parking, but and they're in this business complex, and all of them have to find themselves sharing, and which gives us more reason to have to figure out a parking strategy in that area that will service and be applicable to the required law. With that too, what happens, and this is just a concern I'll just throw out, how many different events take place in that immediate area throughout the year, to include the state fair for about 30 days, to include other special events, and where does that overflow parking go, and is that overflow parking doing the same thing and having the same impact on the neighborhood that is said to be the impact that this club is having? Anybody? Yeah.
I'm not going to claim to be the expert. I'm going to claim to be the person who's been there for just about every day for 6 years. First and foremost, more than 50% of the usages on that block, which is Perry Avenue Exposition,
right,
which you're speaking of, make being on one corner and a huge vacant area on the other side. Half of those businesses are empty. There's over 1,100 parking spaces in that area. There's a DART station 200 feet from the front of my storefront. There's four businesses in the area that have mixed beverage licensings. These are single-story, so they're not towers. These are single-story occupancies. In some cases, second story that have small efficiency lofts where artists are renting out. So there's not a, at least for what's there on the block, there's never really been, from what I've seen, a deficit of parking, mm-hmm. with the exception of the 24-day period that you're speaking of, which is Fair Park.
Right.
It's a state fair. It's a good thing for the economy for Dallas. Absolutely. So, you know, we got to keep that, right? But we do have some traffic issues within the Dallas Opera and the music hall there, but I would also argue culturally I'm willing to put up with that. But I think that Dallas needs to stop looking at things in such an antiquated way. We want to be more pedestrian. We want to be getting people that are from the tropics to come here, and the only way we're going to do that is by, you know, meeting our EPA needs and cutting down the driving in the F-150s, not having a parking space for every single person, but really give incentives for these people to use the public transportation. Why not run the DART rail 24/7 so that we can get people out to the American Airlines Center after 12, and maybe we'll start seeing some of the traffic jams stopping if we actually take those kind of initiatives. I would argue for the idea of a more pedestrian city.
Okay, and thank you. And I'm going to wrap mine up, but thank you very much.
Sure, thank you.
My point is that there are other events, instead of just the club, that are impacting the neighborhood, in my opinion. The state fair impacts it, and it impacts it 30 days in a row. And consistently, and there's parking and traffic and trash that goes throughout that neighborhood. The pickle that you find yourself in is that you're in a building that does not have enough parking, and there are multiple tenants that are having to utilize the parking there. With that being said, I'd hate to single you out, and it's been said that there are four other alcoholic establishments in that area, or in that vicinity, so we have to take note with that. But with that being said, I'm very supportive, but I want to commend Ms. Davis and say to Ms. Davis that whatever it is that we need to do to help alleviate that concern, and to Mr. Gibson, whatever it is that we need to do, there is a need
to follow the leadership there and to figure out very fairly how we can proceed. And that is something that we're going to support Ms. Davis on. I encourage you, run your business, do it right, come back in and continue to work with Ms. Davis so that we can figure out the problem. And maybe it was Lord sent to us at this time to address it so that we can solve it, and then we can use this as a pilot as we go back through other parts of the community. So thank you, and thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to say a couple of things. There's perhaps one bar in that area now, and its face is Robert B. Cullum. It's more a walk-in bar. If you go by that bar in the evening, you might find about 10 or 12 people inside this one particular bar, the Amsterdam Bar, I think that's what it's called. But the other thing is that this particular application came down for an SUP, and right or wrong, as a council member, I have to make a decision, do I support it or do I not support an SUP. At this time, I'm going to give him a one-year SUP because of how exposition is and because of all of the other issues, you know. The fair is not here 365 days a year, and if it was, then we would have major, major problems with the fair every day on that particular side of the of Fair Park. But also just making, because the SUP requires 360 people inside that building, and of course we don't have enough parking for 360 people to park on exposition. The purpose of this was to try to find a way to find other parking space in that area so it would not disrupt the individuals who are living in that area. So that was my main concern. So I'm hoping, Teresa, as we start the CO within the next year, that everybody can bring their parking lot up to CO and do all the amenities that is required by a parking lot owner. That is my main concern. I move to close the public hearing on this particular zoning item.
And for my clarification, ma'am, no automatic renewals on this SUP?
Yes.
And 1 year from April 1st?
Yes.
We've already got the motion. Ms. Hossel?
Oh, a date of opening.
Ms. Hossel?
Yeah, on the date, but it's April 1st.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to make one point before we do our final vote. I want to thank my colleague, Councilwoman Davis, for making the graffiti abatement a key point of our motion to approve. I think we need to take every opportunity we can to hold our businesses accountable for getting rid of graffiti in their businesses. So I will be supporting her motion. Thank you.
Ms. Rackham.
With Mayor, you know, I just want to bring one point on. I did talk to Madrono about parking, you know, about the Dallas Black Dance Theater, and someone gave me a call me and said that, talking about parking issues, that we passed we're still looking into parking problem, and we still got some parking problem with booting. And some of our parking meters that state that you can see here pay $5, $2 here, but right down the bottom that you can pay $5. And this event that we had on MLK, the Martin Luther King, and I got a letter here that 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 people for hawking parking enforcement, all their cars got booted, you know, and I just want to make sure, put upon a record that, and I talked to Madrona, she's going to look into it, run the test kit, but when we got activities going on that run in Madrona, I am concerned when they come to me and say we got an issue when we have some kind of event going on, and what happened with the Good Samaritan of Curtis Keene and the Dallas Black Academy, and they went in their pocket and refunded those people $735. And paid for it, and they cannot prove that they paid or did not pay. So I want to make sure you look into it. I know Madrono, and she told me that Aaron Ron going to look into it, but we are trying to get every revenue. We're talking about parking, and parking is the issue. Just make sure that people who do park and who do pay don't get booted. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ordered. Madam Secretary.
Item number 50 is a public hearing regarding an application for and an ordinance granting a commercial service district on property zoned in R-7.5A, single family district, an ordinance granting a specific use permit for commercial motor vehicle parking, and a resolution accepting deed restrictions volunteered by the applicant on property zoned a CS-D-1 commercial service district with a D-1 dry liquor control overlay and an R-7.5A single-family district on the north side of CF Hahn Freeway.
Mr. Mayor, within 16 notices, property owners within 300 feet of their request, we received one reply in favor and three replies in opposition. That requires the majority to approve this.
Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? Any speakers in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve? Any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? Any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve? No speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins, please.
Yep. I move to close the public hearing and follow the CPC recommendation of approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, number 51, please.
Item number 51 is a public hearing to receive comments regarding an application for and an ordinance granting an industrial manufacturing district and a resolution accepting deed restrictions volunteered by the applicant on property zoned an industrial research district located on the east side of Duncanville Road, south of Keith Boulevard.
Mr. Mayor, within five notices, property owners within 300 feet of their request received two replies in favor and no replies in opposition. This is a designated zoning case and would require 2 seconds.
Thank you. This item will require 2 seconds. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak in opposition of the CPC recommendation to approve the item? Any speakers in opposition? Any speakers in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve? Please step forward, sir. State your name and address for the record. You will have 3 minutes to speak.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Council members, Mr. Gonzalez and staff. I'm Mark Housewright, 900 Jackson Street, Dallas, Texas. I'm here today on behalf of JAM Interests and JAM Distributing. We're requesting a change from IR to IM zoning down on Duncanville Road just off Keith. The reason we're requesting this change is to allow expansion of our existing business. We'd like to do one more use down there, the storage of petroleum products. That's not not allowed in IR, but it is in IM, and that's the reason for our request today. Currently, JAM is an excellent operator down in this area and has been handling these products on an in-and-out basis. They would like to install permanent petroleum storage in the area. It will add about a $6 million investment in the southern sector and initially about 20 jobs, expanding probably to the area of 30 new jobs in the Oak Cliff area. Applicant has volunteered deed restrictions that restrict any uses in IM that are not allowed with the exception of an SUP or residential adjacency so that we could take any concerns about the additional business out of the picture in the area. Normally you deal with three issues when you're looking at a zoning change down here, and one is whether the request is compatible with the other operations. Let me just say that everything on the west side of Walton Walker Road, Loop 12, in that vicinity is zoned industrial of one type or another, and this is consistent with everything that's going on. As a matter of fact, the site is within about 180 yards of an IM zoning area, so we're very close to what's already there and compatible with uses. As a matter of fact, staff even requested that we look at the IM zoning 180 yards north, but the only tract there is under contract right now that's not currently being used, so that wasn't a feasible suggestion. Other than the job creation and new investment and creation of additional tax base in the southern sector, we also feel that this enhances the area. One thing it will do is remove a use just to the south by the acquisition of this land that's currently a used car lot, probably the most incompatible use in the general area. And we think it will enhance the area for that reason. We're asking that you approve the request today and that you accept the deed restrictions offered. As I think you heard from, if you had a chance to look at the notes from Councilman or from Commissioner Mike Englund, excellent operator, a use that's perfectly compatible with the others in the neighborhood, and matter of fact, good enough to eat off the floor in the area, that, according to Commissioner Englund. Be happy to answer any questions
Thank
or
you.
Any other information you'd like to have about the
Secretary.
Request.
Thank you. Are there any other individuals that would like to speak in favor of the CPC recommendation to approve? No other speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. I had a good opportunity to visit with the president and CEO of the company. They're headquartered in Houston. They're new to Dallas within the last year and a half. This is an opportunity for them to create roots. They're contemplating buying this building that they're actually leasing right now. I do believe they're a good operator, and I am pleased that they have offered to provide deed restrictions that takes the IM zoning, it narrows it down to IR, makes it a light IM or a heavy IR zoning. So that all being said, I move to close the public hearing in Z090 -113 and approve the recommendation of the City Planning Commission.
Second. Ms. Hustle, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, on this item, I have about 200 homes that are in District 1 that are right next to this particular property, and I took the liberty of sending a letter to each property owner in that area that is closest to the proposed land use change, and I will be supporting this motion to go ahead and go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Newman, I am supporting the item, but I wanted to recognize our former council member and ask him, Mr. Housewright, it's always good to see a former council member come back. But I want to know on the jobs, I'm certainly not suggesting any who you should hire. I'm not suggesting that at all. I just want to know, will there be any preference given on the jobs to local residents?
Yes, they have local residents in the area. They certainly would like to hire new employees from that area, if it's at all possible. They certainly have a mixed workforce down there and are looking to be proactive in that effort.
That is excellent. As you know, Mr. Housewright, we have a bit of a higher unemployment rate in our sector than the other side of the Trinity, and so I'm always encouraged when companies come in and give some thought to the fact that we want to hire the folk who are right around there. Thank you so much for your prior service, and it's good to see you here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, 52, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item number 52 is a public hearing to receive comments on a proposed municipal setting designation to prohibit the use of groundwater as potable water beneath properties owned by 318 Cadiz LP, 1817 South Industrial LP, Misty Doan, Brian Famcar, Nicole Famcar, Mohammed Pomerouz, Michael Urich, Jean Louise Urich, Sportatorium Associates, Inc., and JFA Sportatorium, Inc., located near the intersection of Cadiz Street and South Riverfront Boulevard and adjacent street rights-of-way, and an ordinance authorizing support of the issuance of a municipal setting designation. Are there any individuals in the audience that would like to speak on the item that was just read into the record?
Please step forward. You will be allowed 2 minutes to speak. State your name and address for the record. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Rainey. I'm at 2200 Ross Avenue, Suite 2200, 75201. I'm here on behalf of the applicant and here to ask your support for the MSC. I have the professional geoscientist here for the application also.
Thank you. If I may go ahead and read the statement. Pursuant to Section 51A-6.108G3 of the Dallas Development Code, the applicant or a licensed professional engineer or professional geoscientist who is familiar with the application must be present and available to answer the questions. Is there anyone that has any questions from the individual present? Sir, if you'll go ahead and step up and identify yourself for the record.
My name is Sam Johnson. I'm a Texas licensed professional geoscientist. I live at 3508 Seltzer Drive in Plano, Texas.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here.
Are there any other speakers that would like to speak on the item? No other speakers, Mr. Mayor?
Mayor, move to
approve. Second. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? So ordered. That brings us to the close of the agenda. Our after speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We begin your afternoon speakers with Marie Beveridge, followed by B.M. Randolph. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Again, individuals are allowed 2 minutes to speak. Please address your comments to the Chair, Mayor Leppert. First speaker, Marie Beveridge, not present. B.M. Randolph, not present. D.J. Mayfield, not present. Jada Wooten, not present. Next speaker, Ozumba Lunk.
Mayor of City Council, my name is Ozumba Lunk, County for Constable in Precinct 5. Nurse in Chief Ozumba Lunk. I talked to you last week about the stealing of ballots and how Judge Sepulveda in Precinct 5, Justice of Peace Court, signs of being stolen, taken away, and held hostage. There's a $500 reward being offered for those who are stealing, intimidating, and taking senior citizens and old people ballots. And I'm adding a couple of dollars to that myself, so that'll be over $500. So I'm asking the citizens to take your cell phone cameras out, your cameras out, have a driver's license, ID, take a pencil and paper, write this information down, take your pictures going and coming. I have pictures of some that have been doing it for years, and we're going to take some more. I got my Pentax camera out with my telephone lens on it last week. Also, I've been having some negative and positive calls, and to me, they have both been positive because people are interested in what I've been talking about down here, and I can't cover everything, and I tell them, I say, you have 3 minutes, call the City Secretary's office and get on the agenda to speak. I know this is kind of confusing sometimes because you say I talk about many subjects, but as you know, 3 minutes is not a lot of time, that's a lot of trust. All praise due to God. God created us for His benefit, for His pleasure. I do not seek the praises of man, trophies, awards, but I seek God. Alpha and Omega. God bless you. Thank you. Live a shower, Mr. Mayor. Love you, brother.
Thank you. Your next speaker is William Hopkins. Not present. Jewel Floyd. Jewel Floyd is not present. Your final speaker this afternoon is Gwen Wooten.
Good afternoon. The mayor of the City Council. My name is Gwen Wooten.
Black History Month is next month. I know y'all might not know it, but it's next month, and I want the city of Dallas to be involved in the celebration. And I don't want no Black City Council members down here and downstairs, because they're not history yet. Not yet. We have Black history in this city. I know, because my ancestors have been here since the 1800s. So we got some Black history. And I want it down there in the lobby, like y'all do the Irish, and get them popcorn and soda water and stuff. I want some of that done for the African Americans in this city. Now, I'm deeply concerned about what's going on over there at Graves Park. Y'all got a green fence around that park. And you're doing something you don't want nobody to see. Because, see, I go everywhere in Dallas because I'm from Dallas, and I got relatives all over the city, so I might be anywhere. But on the 19th of June, we had a celebration there, and it was totally messed up. So I thought maybe y'all were doing something. But when you put the green fence around it, hiding what you're doing, then I know it's something you're doing down there that I don't want done. So, if a park is like an open space, it's the open space in the community. Y'all spent $5 million this morning on some open space downtown. For people who work here, they don't live here, they work here. So if they come in here early in the morning, and then they take the money out and then talk about the city. And ain't paying no commuter taxes. That's what they need to be paying, is some commuter taxes come in here. But the last time I had a meeting concerning Graves Park, y'all was going to put a creek in now. Like a mini or two of what? What's that, Lee Park, Confederate Park down there? Graves Park was named after a preacher, Mr. Reverend Graves, a black man who owned a church on Hall Street. A white woman bought this land and designated it to the African American community. It's a historical park for the African American community. Although we have nothing to do with what's going on down there. I have a 4 o'clock meeting with a member of the park department today to explain to me what y'all are doing down there. Now, I have seen the renewal of a lot, no, Terrell Creek. Y'all redid Terrell Creek. I ain't seen no fences around it. I ain't seen no fences around Keys Park, no fences around Samuel Park. And I want to know why it's going to be a fence around Graves Park that's going to divide it from the predominantly his black African. My mind's so messed up with other folks, I can't think by myself. A historically black park separated from the black community with a brick wall. That's blatant racism. You don't put brick walls around parks. They're open spaces. And I want some open spaces for that park, for that community across the street. Because when I go up there, I see white people walking there with dogs, letting them use the bathroom. And that's basically what it's being used for, except for the activities that the Hispanics have in the afternoon. But it's time to have African Americans inclusive in this city, and I want to know what's going on at Graves Park, and if there's no interest to that park from Central, then I want one opened up. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, 213. Where's your...
Mr. Mayor?
Ms. Hunt, I'm sorry, I apologize.
That's okay. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Just don't throw another basketball at me. We're... No, I'm just teasing. I wanted to respond to your concerns about Griggs Park, because that is in my district. And I did. Well, I'm glad you're meeting, first of all, with some folks from the Parks Department, but I wanted to let you know I had a meeting yesterday, and we talked about Griggs Park, and part of the discussion was, you know, how we're moving forward on the master plan that we did a few years ago. We're using the money we've got today. You know, we don't have the money to do the entire master plan, but we're using the money we have today, keeping it largely a green space, but it will be improved. On Central, I think the idea with any type of wall structure is to create a safe area, because we've got Woodall Rogers right over there, a freeway right over there, and what we want to do is make sure it's safe and that it's not creating a situation where some child may get hurt by getting out into traffic. We don't have a traffic light there except at Ruth Street, and so you have cars whipping around there. That's the only thing. We're going to make sure it's an open park and it's a good space, and we're investing in it, and I welcome your comments after you have a chance to talk with the parks folks. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. 2:14, it's time to go practice basketball class. Basketball class. We're adjourned.